Good morning, Chair. Thank you. Honorable members, receive the greetings, my colleagues. On my side, the only person I can introduce is the Chair of the Audit Committee, Mr. Rousseau. He is representing Mr. Wakaba. There he is, Chair, on the other side.
I didn't see the audit action plan. It is there, so I don't know. It is there. Yeah, it is there. Oh, probably I don't see it so far. Anyway, my glasses. So now you are welcome. We welcome Mr. Rousseau. Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair.
Once again, colleagues, Honorable Chair, we will start with... I think I won't waste your time by going into the normal prefaces of mission, statement, visions, and all that. We'll go straight into the areas that I think will make sense in terms of the current report, 2-3. I would just want to take the members go to page 9 of the report. Page 9 is talking about vision, mission, and strategic goals. I will specifically focus my attention to strategic outcome-oriented goals, because those goals should be covered inside the report, one way or another. The first one is we need to have effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, and administration. We need to enhance production, employment creation, and economic growth in the sector. We will have to create an enabling environment for food security and sector transformation. Sustainable use of natural resources is key as we advance towards implementing the goals of food security and employment. That then will take me straight away to page heading DAF 2014-2019 focus. And I will run through this with the assumption that most members are familiar with the strategic goals of the government, specifically those goals as they pertain to agriculture. We have got the National Development Plan, which speaks to our government giving us an opportunity to go in and achieve job creation, and that has been targeted at 1 million jobs by 2030. We sometimes call this Vision 2030. And then the new growth path really is about producer support and puts in targets for doing that. But that is going to be done in the context of medium-term strategic framework, in the context of basic outcomes, outcome 4, 7, and 10. They talk about decent jobs, the creation of decent jobs, that's outcome 4. Outcome 7, talk about the establishment of a vibrant and self-reliant rural community. Outcome 10 is cautioning us that as we do that, we cannot degrade the environment for sustainability, or it calls it preservation of our natural resources. The objectives, Honorable Chair, from 2014 to 2019 is continue putting an emphasis on food security with specific reference to ensuring that the more than 12 million citizens who are vulnerable to hunger are food secure, and they have access to safe and nutritious food. As we do that, the government has many a time implored us to come up with transformation, but this time the government has noted that this has been slow, and therefore put in a qualification that this transformation must be radical. In other words, it has to happen as a matter of course. There is no more compromise on it. There is no more let's discuss it. We have got to make sure that the economy of South Africa is inclusive, as it does the transformation. The fisheries sectors, the same. We'll do that through the small-scale fisheries policy. We've had discussions with the small-scale fisheries. We put up our strategic plans to meet the requirements that they presented to the portfolio committee. We had to adhere to new regimes for sustainable forest management. So those objectives are stated as known objectives. But then how have we performed in achieving those objectives up to now, as in the context of quarter three? That would be slide, maybe call it page 18. MTSF target was 300,000 jobs have to be created by 2019. Up to date, we have done 42,346. We have got a negative variance of 258. And the idea there is to ensure that the livelihoods of people are improved. 1 million hectares of unutilized land under production must be under production by 2019. The focus here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of this August Committee, is to ensure that the communal land, in particular, the land that is closer and in which our people live, can no longer be left lying fallow. That land must be utilized, in partnership, of course, with the relevant stakeholders, to improve the livelihoods of those people in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. Rural poverty is a scourge that the government can tolerate no more. So therefore, 1 million hectares have to be utilized. That would lead to us improving food security. We have to support smallholder producers by 2019. 80,000 of them have to be supported by 2019. That is the target. At this point, we are sitting at 122,254. Well, you can call it a positive variance, is there. We have sanitized and made sure that the integrity of these numbers is correct. The key here, Chair, is to ensure, though, that there is targeted support that can be measured, that will assure it leads to economic growth. It's not just a support. So the nature of that support must transform the individuals or those community members into productive, self-reliant communities. So the kind of support that is given, we measure it. Slide 20, 1.6 household benefits. There should be about 1.6 households that benefit from food security and nutritious initiatives. The target, the actual year to date, is 693,000 with a balance of 907 to improve food security. 153 hectares of land under rehabilitation. The land that has been degraded, we need to ensure that land is rehabilitated. There are a series of programs that talk to that. One of those is land care, to ensure that indeed, as we utilize the land, we are not degrading it. We have achieved here to date, Madam Chair, just below 87,000 hectares. The positive, or we can call it a positive delta, and the objective is improve natural resources and improve food security due to additional land that can be considered for production. Now we need to get into specifically we are now talking about targets, the highlights against quarter three targets specifically. We are dealing with MTSF, now we are dealing with specific quarter three targets. Quarter three target was 20,000 households benefiting from food productive initiatives. We have 10,000 farmers or households that we have been given by regions as having received or benefiting from food security. However, we are also cautious that the numbers themselves, when we receive and make reference to them to you, are numbers that have got integrity. So you will note that we have got 10,000 households on the extreme, right? That says there is a reason for variance. So we are sanitizing. We are trying to ensure that the 10,000 number we get from regions is actually accurate. So that's why you see it on that side. We would like to ensure that whatever we report there has got the necessary integrity. 7,000 smallholder producers must receive support, 7,000 for this quarter. 463, we have trained most of these producers. A variance of 7,421 smallholder producers are reported to have been supported during this period. As I mentioned earlier, we are ensuring that there is integrity in the number. So we are cautious of just bringing that number as an absolute number that has been verified. We have not yet verified that. So bear with me as I report towards ensuring that what we give you is something with integrity. 80,000 hectares of land that is underutilized must now be utilized in communal areas, specifically in the context of this quarter. 80,000 hectares must be utilized in communal areas and land reform projects, and it must be cultivated. So consequently, we take this target and, of course, put assumption and distribute it per province. A total of 25,000 hectares were reported to have been cultivated, and other phases of validation have not been concluded yet. So we are progressing on the target. We are once again ensuring that there is sanity there, there is integrity in that number. 850 hectares of planted TUP. Quarter 3 target is 694 hectares have been done. The variance is 156. Insufficient rainfall and high temperatures have resulted in some areas not being planted. Two agro-processing entrepreneurs have been trained on processing norms and standards. Quota 3 is 16, target is 60, we have achieved 16 with a variance of 14. A total of 16 agro-processing entrepreneurs were trained. SABS has recommended to train all these entrepreneurs at once as a cost-effective measure than training these people at individual level. And I think the reason why we put this target of 2, it was because of financial constraints. We also further received discount from SABS Training Academy, which allowed for training of additional agro-processing of 4 entrepreneurs. The annual plan target for 2016-17 was to train 12 entrepreneurs. I think the emphasis on 12 on entrepreneurs is a shift from the emphasis of just job creation. We want to ensure that people create jobs through their own initiatives so that we are not continuously defining our people as employees. They must be entrepreneurs, people with a vision to create a self-reliant food security vision. So that's why this entrepreneur thing comes, is to ensure that we actually are creating business people. Five commodity-based cooperatives have been established. Total of 5 has been done. It is separated into 3 provinces, 3 for the Eastern Cape, 1 Orange Free State, Gauteng. So pretty much we've achieved that. We need to ensure that those cooperatives are fully supported and now they actually are productive. 30 cooperatives were supported with training. The norm is to train a total of 6 cooperatives per province. However, there was a special request to train 2 more cooperatives from Mpumalanga province. operation, two operation packages. These projects from operation package needed to be supported. We have supported two, actually have supported three. Unfortunately, these are demand driven. 10 joint operations through the Operation Pakisa initiatives. We have done 13 with a variance of, well, don't want to call it a thousand. Yes, positive variance of 3. Pakisa operations were planned and executed with partners, and this was necessitated as a result of the increased illegal, unreported, and unregulated activities. Madam Chair, up to now, we have been reporting on targets and actuals year to date with a variance being positive. Now we're going to look at performance highlights against quarter three target, but this is a narrative with specific reference to issues of governance and administration. It is our view that we cannot achieve targets if we are not complying to governance standards. So therefore, the fraud risk register has been reviewed in terms of its relevance in creating awareness on the prevention of fraud and corruption. So that is a guide for us, fraud risk register, to ensure that what we do has got integrity. Quarterly HR plan has been implemented and the report has been developed. Indeed, the plan was developed to guide and assist the department to set out how to identify skills, address supply and demand issues, and attract, develop, and nurture the workforce so as to be responsive to service delivery challenges. This point, I can just pause and highlight the significance of this point, which is the job profile should inform the type of candidate that we are bringing in. We are not going to mismatch, have a skill that is not related to the profile of the job itself. So that's why this is very important, just to mention it. Interim financial statements were submitted to National Treasury on the 31st of October, 2016. National Policy on Comprehensive Producer Support is undergoing approval process after internal and external consultation process has been concluded. Estimates of national expenditures have been submitted regarding priorities for 2017 and 18. Consultation on the integrated agricultural development finance policy, the model, have been concluded as part of the IADFP conference, which took place on the 17th to 18th November 2016 to discuss funding modalities on the development of financial services. Sorry about that, Chair. Communication strategy was aligned with the medium-term strategic framework, and media plans have been implemented for key events such as the World Food Day, the Research and Technology Fund. The report has been tabled and accepted at MANCO on the 7th of December 2016. Strengthening integrated performance management. The moderation score for MPAT 2016 has been released by DPME. There is slight improvement in most of the key performance areas, and also comments have been provided. The quarterly planning and reporting meeting was held on the 12th to the 13th of December 2016, specifically to review mid-term performance, as well as the second draft 2017-18 APPs to ensure alignment to the MTSF, RABAC, as well as to the framework strategic plans and annual performance plans. That's very, very significant, that we perform or implement strategy as in a common understanding of its objectives, all the way down to the district. We strengthening integrated performance management. A workshop was held on the 7th to the 11th of November 2016 to review current transversal indicators. All 9 provincial departments of agriculture and state-owned entities participated in the workshop. The purpose was to enhance joint planning and foster aligned sector plans for effective and efficient performance management. I cannot overemphasize, Honorable Chair, the importance of, so to speak, talking with one language in terms of implementing objectives. We noticed that the province were running their own programs, we were running our own programs. The consequence of this misalignment has been the failure to deliver on the expectations of government objectives. So when we brought everyone together, it allowed us to align to government objectives. Stakeholder intergovernmental relations, very critical. Department of Agriculture, led by AMI, hosted the draft financial relief mechanism workshop on the 14th of October 2016 to discuss financial relief strategies for drought alleviation. 5 imbizos were held as follows: Chani, Mangosi in Nyandeni municipality, Ndelinzima Heritage Site, Hakabe Great Place, King Sabata Dalinjebo, Pokwane local municipality. Honorable Chair, I can just say the impact of this on the budget has been very severe. And the alignment of budget to these individuals and events was not there. The consequence, I'm going to talk about it later, is over expenditure. Responsible, so. But we could not meet these objectives, these individual objectives, if we were going to align ourselves to the budget, strictly speaking. Access to markets by smallholder farmers. Two farms were certified through South Africa Good Agricultural Practices, SAGAP, to enable market access. The SAGAP certification, this program aims to improve participation of the smallholder producers in the mainstream agricultural economy by ensuring compliance to minimum food safety and quality standards, which are required by commercial mainstream market. I cannot overemphasize the significance of smallholder access to markets. Biosecurity success. South Africa reapplied for an OE recognized freedom for PDP, ruminants, or PPR. And the PPR free status was already confirmed by the OIE, which is, the OIE is just a World Health Organization dealing with animal health issues. Animal production and health, 32 light delivery vehicles have been produced in implementing primary animal health care programs. 15 of the 32 vehicles have been delivered thus far in provinces. Very important that we try to go to the villages through what we call rural vets. And we're trying to ensure that the villages, especially communal areas, are educated in terms of animal diseases, in particular animal husbandry. To do that, we needed to have these so-called animal clinic vehicles. So when we talk about them, we're talking creating access so that our rural communities have access to knowledge about the use of medicine and understanding of animal husbandry issues. 186 animals were quarantined, 5,372 consignments of meat and products were inspected, and 652 samples drawn with 744 non-compliant. This area has created major challenges for us, especially at border level, where the animals come across And when we start trying to export food, they notice that there is effort, there is a foot and mouth. So we've strengthened our border controls. We're busy with that to ensure that whatever comes in our country is disease-free. Climate change, very important aspect. We have a climate change plan. We monitor the implementation of this climate plan. The main aim of the plan is to minimize the risks and vulnerabilities associated with climate change by increasing resilience of production systems, call it adaptation if you will, reduce greenhouse gas emissions in this sector and ensure food security. Forestry and land rehabilitation, consultation with the reference group and the internal stakeholders on the draft agroforestry strategy framework. Implementation plan took place, and this will ensure that relevant stakeholders' inputs were incorporated in that plan. Consultation with relevant stakeholders on the draft report, on draft red, the strategy assessment report took place this week. To ensure that relevant stakeholders' inputs are incorporated before the discussion report is finalized in calling Q4. Fisheries management, recommendations on determination of TAC, which is total allowable cash, TAA, total allowable effort, or combination thereof in respect of abalone and West Coast rock lobster fishing sectors have been approved. As a very important, that's an insignificant development. This is to give fishing rights holders the total allowable cash and estimates for the two fishing sectors, very significant. Progress report on the continuous conditioning of broodstock was compiled. The conditioning of broodstock is based on two new research studies on genetics and nutrition for aquaculture species. Final rights allocation were made for the net feed sector, and the draft rights register for the newly allocated net feed sector was finalized. Up to this point, Madam Chair, we're reporting on our current strategy and how far we have moved on the strategy in quota 3 particularly and in meeting those quota 3 objectives. However, Madam Chair and honorable members, as we progress, certain events emerge that we did not plan. So we'd like to report on those right now. These are events that caught us off guard with a huge negative impact on our performance. So we just want to just touch on them quickly, Madam Chair. The drought has caught us pretty much unaware, especially in terms of how we were prepared for it. Funds have been requested for drought. We have requested this fund, this assistance from National Treasury through the National Disaster Management Center. We're working there with cooperative governance and traditional affairs. We had to do a verification of that situation in the declared areas. National Treasury made an amount of $212 million available for the financial year 2016-2017 to assist farmers were affected by this drought. Provinces, in turn, contributed $198 million through their equitable share funding. They were all utilized to assist affected farmers. All the affected provinces are now, as some have seen, finalized the implementation of their assistance program up to now. Aquaculture Development Bill. The department attended the second Net Lake Aquaculture Task Team. The meeting was on the 12th, 17th of October 2016, where socio-economic impact assessment report for the bill were thoroughly discussed. The resolution taken on the follow-up meeting held on 19 January 2017 was that the department should have bilateral engagement with BBC, the Black Business Council. further legal opinion on the Aquaculture Development Bill from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor was received on 12 December. The next NEDLEC meeting is scheduled for the 10th March 2017, where constituencies will submit their respective positions on each clause of the draft bill. We have an attack from fall armyworm. We identify this worm positively as fall armyworm on the 3rd of February 2017. It is a migratory pest which invaded an area of approximately 6 million square kilometers in southern Africa. Initially, we detected it in Limpopo, Gauteng, Northwest, Mpumalanga, KZN, Free State, and Northern Cape. We cooperated with all provinces to interact on operations with Grain SA, Sansco, AFC, Northwest University, CropLife, Insecticide Resistance Action Committee, and CropWatch. This coordination by these various sectors helped us to come, one, with a plan that is comprehensive, and secondly, that reaches out in terms of the footprint. Surveillance conducted based on scouting reports from above mentioned organization and direct interaction from farmers. The farmers were actively involved in helping us also. New areas and routes are confirmed via laboratory analysis. A pheromone trapping network is planned to be implemented as soon as pheromones are permitted for importation. 31 products from 15 active ingredients are registered to be used. New regulations have been drafted and en route for approval. All documents are placed on DAP website as reference. So clearly, these would have needed more budget, and I think as we go forward as government, we are going to ensure that there is a contingency fund that deals with these emerging issues. Because if we take from the current scarce resources, we actually almost risk achieving the objectives for which the government has set to meet the needs of our people. Having said that, let me go to the commercialization of black farmers. The 2017-18 guiding framework for CASP and ILEMA grants undergone approval process on the 5th of December 2016. The guiding framework captured, among others, the commercialization of 450 farmers and 50 of those black farmers per province. We are going to set aside at least 20% of this grant funding. It is, Madam Chair, very important for us to broaden the scope of commercialization in South Africa, to make it as representative as possible, to ensure maximum development of the capability of food security in areas where they come from. More often than not, it's going to be rural areas. I do know that most black farmers, they produce first for food security, ensure that the neighbor is actually fed before they can export. So to do this really is to ensure that we meet the quality of assistance for our people. So this is very important to our life. Operation Pakisa for Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. DAF and the Rural Development Department have embarked on a 6-month consultation process on Pakisa. We call that the lab, wherein a number of consultations occurred to drive success of Operation Pakisa. But more importantly, it must be representative with the public sector, with the private and public sector working together. The lab, which constitutes representation or representative from government, academic and research institutions, as well as business, organized labor, private sector and non-governmental organizations, have finalized 27 initiatives across 7 work streams, namely land, rural development, labor, grains, livestock, horticulture, and producer support. These work streams, especially the seven work streams, will assist in optimizing the management of natural resources, developing skills and capacity in the agricultural sector, stimulate funding and finance value chain development and market access, coordination and knowledge management, as well as reconfiguring space and promoting functional rural settlement. Operation Pagisa in Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development aims to enhance and transform the agricultural sector, as well as accelerate land reform to ensure an inclusive rural economy. I cannot overemphasize that. It is a reinforcement. Operation Pagisa is not a new product. It is a reinforcement of our current programs to deliver speedily and efficiently. And therefore, it's important that I explain that point, Madam Chair, because I've got the impression that people think Operation Pagisa is a program of its own. Among other initiatives, inventions, I apologize. The program reviews existing producer support models as well as the development finance models aimed at fast-tracking land reform to find workable solutions, given the urgent need for government to make progress in land reform and food security. The Operation Pagisa on Agricultural Land Reform also seeks to address constraints in ensuring the equitable access to land, both towards economic development and agrarian transformation. Honorable President Jacob Zuma, on Friday, 24th February 2017, launched this program. He lauded the program as a breakthrough in ensuring now that radical transformation will in fact be assisted by this program at a speed. In fact, I can just say quickly as I speak, I remember that Operation Pagisa, I take it for granted that we all know, just for information, honorable members, to you, honorable chair, it is a Malaysian program that has developed and assisted the strategies of development and growth in Malaysia. We took part of that program that's relevant to us. So when we talk about Operation Pagisa, we're talking about a project that has delivered results somewhere, and we see no reason to think that it cannot do the same in our own economy. Now I'm on challenges impacted. So we have now left, having concluded on emerging issues, going into an acceptance of the fact that there have been non-achievements, and perhaps what are we doing with those non-achievements? I wouldn't have loved to see Madam Chair and the honourable members start to say, why are you not talking about your failures? Why are you not talking about those things that you are struggling with? So this is really a transparent admission by us as managers to ensure that we know our weaknesses, we are working on them. For example, slide 46, the finalization of submission and validation of evidence for reported period is prescribed by DPME to be 90 days after the end of the quarter. 20,000 households benefiting from food security initiatives were affected. 7,000 smallholder producers receiving support, all these. However, planned action is the process of evidence submission and validation will be concluded in time for submission of quarter 3 actual performance with the information to DPE on the 30th April 2017. The current reports reflect performance at preliminary reporting phase. So what we are accepting here is the fact that the period between us reporting here and validating the numbers that are supposed to be reported here take time. And consequently, we may not have reported accurately on things because of the validation process that allows us to report what is accurate in this august body. The same year, finalization of submission, coordinate bilateral and multilateral cooperation engagements, align memorandums of understanding to cut up principles and facilitate alliance building. So pretty much, this is where we are caught. The time it takes to validate the reports that we, the numbers that we get from regions and submitting them to DPME. Conclusion of operational plans, which was done after conclusion of ABEP, APPs, reflected different timelines to what was initially thought of. Advice, for example, recommendation of commercial fishing rights on the determination of TAC and TAE or combination thereof in respect of the 9 fishing sectors have been submitted for approval. Recommissioning of Western Cape State Forest plantations. The action that we are planning to advise, the advice has been given for us to consider breaking down all the APP targets into operational plan milestones before tabling to get realistic time frames. The targets will be finalized during quarter four. Conclusion of operation plans, which was done after conclusion of APP, reflected different timelines, as I've just said. Submit draft of Agri-BE enforcement regulation to Agriculture and Sustainable Rural Development Committee and MANCO for input. The advice has been given to consider breaking down APP targets into, as I said initially, operation plans milestones before tabling to get realistic time frames, especially that the targets will then be reported on quarter four. There's quite a lot of these, Madam Chair. I wouldn't like to bore you with these. It's just an admission that there is a process that takes time to allow us to report end of quarter every time, but we're working on that for now. On internal audit, I think perhaps I'll allow the audit colleagues to talk on this if they are around. Okay, let's talk to you, but please, Madam Chair, if you can give us, I just want the manager to come and do the presentation, because I think they are much, I don't want to interfere with this research, this audit committee work. I want it to be as objective as possible in assessing our performance, so I'm not going to be like a policeman, investigate myself and report that I'm doing well. With your permission, Madam Chair, we can just call the manager to come and report.
Yes,
around his house. Oh, the chair, you take it. The acting chair of the audit committee. The chair accepts. If you're familiar, Mr. Rook, you can take that one.
DG Chair, I can just comment. You know, I'm the acting chairman of the audit committee. And we had an audit committee meeting the other day of last week. And a lot of progress has been made in the internal audit division. If I can take over the last 2-3 years, the division has really improved tremendously in its capability to address control issues and to do the necessary work within the department. I can just say there was an independent external quality review on the internal audit division, and they got the highest assessment of what can be given, general conformance with policies and procedures. So, which was very positive, which a number of years ago it would never have happened. So I'm very glad that that was the situation. As far as the whole performance management is concerned within the audit, under the ambit of the internal audit, there's been progress. There's certainly been progress in performance management, although there's still a problem with monitoring and actioning. Progress has been made, but generally speaking, there is sometimes a problem with monitoring process and the actioning, and it happens right to the people in charge of the various programs. In fact, the internal audit, the audit committee indicated that they want the deputy director general to take direct responsibility for what's happening in their programs, and in fact any suggestions that's made by the audit committee or the internal audit, that they take personal responsibility for that and prove and sign off on these things. Certain things you can't delegate, certain things you've got to take responsibility. So the accountability ends at the top. So, but generally speaking, there's been a satisfactory implementation of internal procedures and the monitoring process. But although there have been weaknesses still in monitoring and actioning, there have been improvement, but there are still weaknesses. Chair, thank you.
Can I go ahead, sir? Thank you, Chair. Risk management, I'm not going to go in detail around risk management except to say it is a critical component of our management. There are issues that we have picked up that are posing risk going forward. One of them is the inadequate provision of comprehensive MAFISA services. This MAFISA program, I'm tracking it. There was 1 billion yesterday, I found it 10. We want to find out where is the major capital, where did it go? So we have got a reason for this problem. They said possible increase of bad debt because some of the beneficiaries might not be able to invest, to harvest or sell their commodities due to drought. Budget constraints continue to exist, and the implementation of the scheme requires financial resources. It is noted that the ARC is assisting the department to implement an alternative measure. Clearly, Madam Chair, without bother really taking you through this, except to say there are areas we've identified as high risk. We've developed a risk profile register. We're comfortable that risk profile is going to assist us understand and put plans to ensure that risks are mitigated. And the major risk that the department has right now is budget constraints. We are not meeting our budget. We're performing high above it. And the reason is simple, is that every year there are targets to be met. And every year the budget is reduced. So the gap between what we need to do or every year is widening. And the budget continues to decrease. That's a major, major, major challenge to our department. I would therefore want to go, Madam Chair, to human resources. We can start, Madam Chair, at page 58. It just deals with between 2014-15 and 2016-17, the post-establishment have decreased from 6,200 to 6,952 posts. Vacancy rate has increased from 10 to 11%. Staff turnover decreased from 7.9 to 6.8%. We have, though, developed a human resource plan, and that was submitted to DPSA. We have key performance indicators. One is the repositioning of HR as a strategic partner to enable DAF, which is the department, to achieve its strategic objectives. One of those repositioning principles is to ensure that we have correct profiles, the individual performing a job that they are able to do or reconciles with the profile of that job. The other key objective is to ensure that we employ the youth. Transformation of the workforce is an ongoing process. Management of the challenges of an aging and ailing workforce and employment. So we just have got older people and I guess sickly ones. The dashboard is in front of you, honorable members. I wonder if you want me to go through it. If you don't, then I could just go to look at the staff age profile as of quarter 3. We have got 20 to 24.
Wow.
The total of age group is only four, in fact it's 533, 60 to 64, 55 to 59 is 33. But it seems to me that it follows the normal aging, which at 65 has to retire. Fortunately, we do not have anyone at 65. There's one who's sitting at there, about 222 sitting at 60 to 64. Maybe that would create a space for us to employ the youth there. Then we've got the SMS profile on page 62.
Want to talk about anything in Zondongala?
Through you, Chair.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Madam Chair and Honorable Members. If, for example, we look at slide 459, that's the dashboard. It shows you the total establishment, how many positions are filled and how many are vacant. And if you go to the middle of the slide there, it shows that by 31 October, the vacancy rate was 10.5. It remained as 10.5 in November, and by end of December, it rose to 11%. This is as a result of the budget cuts and the ceilings that have been placed on the compensation of employees. It results in a negative impact on our ability to perform what we need to perform as per plans. And if you go to the next slide is talks about the vacancy rate, 10.5 in October, 10.5 in November, and it's rising. The negative effect of this is that the ceiling on the compensation of employees results in a growing vacancy rate, and the growing vacancy rate may result in National Treasury again cutting down on the compensation of employees' budget. The slide 61 shows the point that the DG was talking about. If you look at the younger ages, 20 to 24, we have a total of 12. And if you look at the other extreme, between age 60 and 64, we have 222. And if you look at the age group, starting at 40 to 44, you see an increase in the numbers there. 798 between ages 40 and 44. And 813 in the bracket 45 to 49, it increases to 934, and it's between 55 and 59, it's 864. It shows that the balance is towards the older employees, and that needs attention. Hence our focus on trying to employ the youth in the department as part of the as an objective. The last slide and on the profile is our targets in terms of gender and race. It shows that at SMS levels we have a target of 50-50 as set by cabinet some years ago, and that currently the representation stands at 53 male and 47 female. And I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
On the finance side, which is the last one, I'll just let Solega to do, he's acting on behalf of the CFO, to do a summation of how far we are on our budget in relation to our target. And if need be, perhaps we can go in detail on expenditure trends. So later could do a summation.
The finance people, we said in the last meeting, we said that they must, the budget that we want to hear, they must attach to the program. They must tell us they budgeted so much for this program, they've not, and this is how much has been spent for this quarter. And we just continue doing finance. So I don't think this part necessary to this meeting, because we don't understand these things, because it's not attached to the programs.
I think you're correct, Chair. We do have a summary that talks to program and year-to-date performance. What is the lag, or what is the delta on that? What is the difference on that program? It's just one slide. Your body gets old. We'll just go on slides. Watch it. What slide is it? Just. I think it's slide 17. I think slide 70, not 71. I don't know if you will agree, Chair, that that slide talked to the request 70 to 73. Does it talk to that, Chair? I don't want to waste your time if it doesn't. Yes, it does. Can you take that slide then, please?
Thank you, DG. Morning, Honorable Chair and members. The budget or the expenditure report we are giving is for quarter three, which is as at 31 December 2016. In terms of the quarters, the target is at 25%. When you look at slide 64, in terms of the programs, program 1 up to program 6, the total spend in total is at 27.4%, which is a little bit above the 25%, which is the target. And amongst other things, if you look at your program 1, your administration, we're at 24%. There's still a delay in the payment of capital works that needs to be paid. Your program 2, your agricultural production, health and food safety is at 25.9%. There was a double payment to ARC for the conditional grants, which is an arrangement that we have between ARC and the department, that payments are done in April and again they are done in quarter 3. And in terms of your program 3, you can see in terms of food security, we're at 30.8%. Again, the impact there is on the conditional grants. Your program 4, it shows an underspending, or in terms of the target of 21%, at 15.2%. It is not necessarily an underspending, except there's a delay in terms of our foreign offices to receive the claims from the DERCO. That's what is causing it to be a little bit below the target. And your program 5, again, it talks to the conditional grants that we have paid, and your program 6. If we go to, you would note when we are at slide 68 that your budget, at slide 64, the total budget is at 6.3 billion. When you move to your slide 67, you can see the total budget is at 65. This is due to the fact that there were adjustments from Treasury in the November period, 212 million for the drought, and there was a 30 million taken from the department from compensation of employees to other areas that Treasury needed to fund. We can move, Chair, to slide 70, now that talks on targets. From slide 70 up to slide 74, it talks about the targets, the budget, and what has been spent in terms of the quarters. program one, the administration, you could see in terms of the total budget targets, the budget is 148 million and to date what have been spent is 129. There is a breakdown in terms of the quarters and also it is breakdown in terms of the projects that the program is responsible for. Your program two, again, it talks to what DG has reported in terms of what has been achieved. Now it is breaking it down in terms of the projects, the what was budgeted and what have been spent to date. If I go to slide 75. Your slide 72 talks to program 3, which is your food security and agrarian reform, where the budget is 1.03 billion and to date is 651 to 68. When I say to date, I mean at 31 December 2016, not the current date. And in terms of program 4, what was spent to date is 214 to 91. In terms of program 5 is at 76 million what has been spent to date. And with program 6, your fisheries is 513 that has been spent to date. That summarizes DG. In terms of the total budget, for the target, it was 3 billion and to date is 2.3 in summarizing now all the programs. DG, that ends my financial report.
Not tell us whether you want to send money back to Treasury. Because it's the third court must tell us. I'm saying it's the third court must tell us the possibility of you sending money back because you have not spent.
At the end of the financial year, Chair, there is not much that will be sent back to Treasury. It's in terms of it's on your capital assets. I'm trying to look at my report now. Currently, it shows that there will only be 423,000 that will not be spent at the end of the financial year for transfers and subsidies. So there will be very less that will be taken back to Treasury. As is, the budget is under a lot of pressure we've exceeded on goods and services in terms of what was allocated to the department by 45 million. And the other areas, if you look at it, in terms of your transfers and subsidies, as is right now, there's still a 3.5 million that still needs to be transferred, and it will be transferred before the end of the financial year. On capital assets, there's a 34 million that will not be spent, but if you counter it against the 46 that is exceeded on goods and services, there's still a shortfall of about 12 million. There's anticipated a 34 million savings, not necessarily savings on COE because of the vacancy rate, as was reported from the corporate side.
So I think we need to prepare that properly. Where I am, I'm under strain, generally speaking, from a financial standpoint. So my report would be I need more from Treasury. I have already submitted that as per the request of the WIP. We have submitted what we budgeted and what was the negative variance, what do we still need. That, and in fact, in total, we're short of 500 million to meet the budget right now. The DM was as furious as I am when we realized that for events we already have overspent, and that he thought that there was a possibility that we may not fund June 16, which was one of the things I don't think Treasury can even begin to say no to. So this budget, Madam Chair, I don't think it was aligned from day one to the needs. The consequence is this big gap. Consequently, we rely on these conditional grants. We have got to approve, go and ask DVA for deviation. There is more that is needed on the ground for us to take money to Treasury. So I can definitely tell you, I don't see that happening at all. We are under strain, and the under strain is because every year the targets increase, but the actual budget for those targets, in fact, it is cut every year. But what we'll do, Jay, instead of talking in general terms, it would be proper for us to do we prepare to answer that question in a factual manner than to talk generally. And my apologies that we could not answer that right away. But if you can allow me, Chair, the conclusion, Chair, is pretty much straightforward. We pull out and say, overall, Chair, up to date for quarter three, we're sitting at 67% against target in terms of the milestones that we set for ourselves. We also are under stress on the issue of meeting these current targets. In agro-processing, we have now, Madam Chair, through the researcher working with me, found out that in fact there was a Lehodla decision that agro-processes back to us, to DAF, Land Bank. I've written to the DG of DTI and finance to talk to the return of those. And we're doing the same thing as far as rural development is concerned, where they've taken things like irrigation, debushing. We're bringing those things back. We are fighting to get the budget on the recapitalization. That project cannot come alone. It has to come with the entire resources that go with it. So from that standpoint, there is hope that agriculture will begin to be doing the right things to enable us to deliver, because there is no competency on the side of rural development to drive animal husbandry issues at all. The consequence, there is a lot of confusion on their side. The transfer of NEHA that is on is about to be deregistered, and after that it goes directly to ARC. Madam Chair, I think I'm not going to be taking more of your time as a conclusion. I think we have pretty much put ourselves deep into making sure that we report, with the request that, Chair, perhaps now we are going to be allowed, Honourable Chair and members, you are going to allow us to go out in the country to deliver. It takes a lot of time to come in. The business plans are stopping. There's nothing we're doing on the ground. We humbly request through you, Chair, a situation in which we'll be released to go and do the projects on the ground. With those words, Chair, thank you for the ear, and I hand over to you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, DG. Honourable members, that was the presentation. I'll now invite you to interact with the presentation. Honourable Jaisa, Honourable Matali, Honourable Mapanga, Honourable Vandale, Honourable Maloi, Honourable Kapa, Honourable Feltana, and then Honourable Luka. Oh, Honourable Paulson will be the last one.
Thank you very much, Honourable Shepherd. Just a question on the budget by that good lead. I just heard you good lead A question to that lady now, talk about the budget. I heard you saying that there's a certain amount of money that was taken from the one that was supposed to compensate employees to do something else. I'm just checking on that. What happened, therefore? Because I think the money was meant to pay the employees. Then you say it was taken. So what was actually about? I want to get clarity on that. Because you're also talking about the decrease, the post-establishment decrease, that and this vacancy. So I want to get clarity on that. Then my questions are not many. They are all short. Another question now, Chairperson, there's always a mention of this 1 million of hectares, that is hectares not utilized. So each and every time now you hear that 1 million hectares not utilized. So just want to check now. Are there any new plans perhaps now that we can just make use or utilize these hectares? Because I think we can see these fallow lands now in our rural areas. Then one of the things that I thought now would happen perhaps would be that the department would just consult now with the traditional leaders so that now we use these hectares of land. And there was a mention of detectors that were sent to the provinces. Perhaps now it's one of the issues. Because these tractors can never sit, but it's always another tractors that are meant for provinces and the land, the hectares are not used. So I want to check now if there are any new plans now, so that now we know exactly that these hectares are made use of in order to produce food and the people have something put on the table. Let me put the motion, the question, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable
Minister. Oh, two questions. But I don't usually have long questions. Mine are very short. It means just two questions. Can I
keep them? You still have another one.
Okay. Post-establishment decrease. I wonder, because you said it was 62,000, then now it will reduce to 61,000. So what happened to the people that we suppose, or people that were employed there? Or perhaps now people were not employed, it was just the post-establishment, then you had a lot of vacancies, that people were not employed. Or perhaps it might be one of the reasons now that the post-establishment has to be decrease because you don't employ, so because of this vacancy. Still there, if I can just get clarity on that post-establishment, because we need that people should be employed. But now if it has got to be reduced, so it's going to be a problem. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I hope I didn't misunderstand you, DG, to be saying that you want to be released to go and work, because we invite you here to come and account. I probably in your comment when you talk about being released, you will clarify so that I can understand, because I don't think I understood what you were saying. And the other thing is that the chair was asking a question, and in the course of your response to the question, you were saying that you forwarded something to, I don't know whether you said the WIB or something like that. And I think if that submission is possible, that as a committee we can be advantaged to, probably it will be helpful through the chair. The presentation talked about the interventions that you made on drought. assistance. That's how it is written here, which is drought relief, and money is coming from treasury and from provinces. If you can try and assist so that one can have a better understanding who was affected by the intervention. You know, I interacted with a chair with a person who has a plot, who is complaining that the interventions that are done, mainly the beneficiaries are commercial farmers. Emerging farmers or black farmers, they don't necessarily, they do benefit, but the intervention does not help them to solve the problem. They become worse off than they were before the drought. So if we can have a breakdown of where this intervention was done with these 200, and you said you were allocated 212 million. So if we can an explanation to who benefited as far as that is concerned, I will be very comfortable, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, number three.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the honorable members of the portfolio, the department, and my colleagues. Chairperson, let me first welcome the presentation. I think it is the true reflection of what has been done by the department. Chair, I have a few issues to raise pertaining this report. On slide 22, Chair, where it talk about the 10,000, the reason for variation, where it talks about the 10,000 households were reported to have been supported at other phases of validation has not been concluded. The question, Chair, is why was validation not completed, and why did the department not meet the target, as even if validation could be completed on the 10,000 household. I think this will still be half the target. Number two, still on the very same slide, Chair. I think it's on bullet two, where it speaks of 7,421 smallholders producers reported to have been supported and validation has been completed on 443 producers and is continuing for remaining reported numbers. So I want to check here, Chair, who was supposed to do the validation and what are the reasons for failure to do it as planned for, and what will be the consequences for this. And also on the very same slide, Chair, 700 smallholders producers receiving support. It's only on the progress for the third quarter, it's only 463, which is 6.6%. which were supported. So I just want to find out why did the department only validate these 463 producers against the 700 producers who were targeted. Moving forward, Chair, on slide 23, the first bullet there, there is no achievement there. So I want to find out what makes the department to struggle to conclude the validation process. Against the Chair, 8,000 hectares underutilized land in communal areas and land reform projects cultivated for production. Chair, I think we have a challenge of food security, and the departments must improve the security as per its performance alignment highlights against the MTSF, but it has failed to meet its target of ensuring that the 80,000 hectares of underutilized land is cultivated. What are the reasons for this? And this is unacceptable, as we need to assist our people to have food security. I think, Chair, okay, the last one, Chair, on slide 24.
I can wait. You've taken more than 5 minutes.
Oh, okay, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mapang. Number five?
I thought that you said
number No. You've finished your time. You'll come back if we will come back to you.
Okay, thank you,
Chair. Number five?
Thank you, Chairperson. It's quite a lot of information, so you know, we have to do the honorable thing and ask the right questions. So I will try and be brief on my questions as well, Chairperson. But it's difficult. There are a lot of questions.
You must do quicker, and if you are not finished, I'm going to cut you because we don't have time. There are a lot of questions.
I do understand, Chairperson, but we do have a role to play, and I mean, time could not be one of the things that inhibit us to do our work. I think that's quite important, that we must make time for the difficult questions. I just want to start then on one is the, you talk on page 15 about the small-scale fisheries sector transformation. Maybe you can tell me, I had a talk with some people in the kelp sector, and a lot of these kelp quotas have been reserved for cooperatives. But you must remember there are jobs in there, and there is an established market, and now nobody or very little people is harvesting that kelp. Kelp is also very important for the feeding of the abalone. Is there an interim measure in place for this? I mean, we can't lose those established markets. We should transfer it in a way that is acceptable. We can't destroy the market and then think we can build it up again. We won't. And then on page 12 and 13, you talk about the funding for the department. A lot of funding is derived from the sale of confiscated abalone. And, you know, I think this is a bad habit and a conflict of interest. I think that, you know, if the abalone is confiscated, it should be given to the people that actually have quotas. And then it should be changed around for that quota allocation so that the abalone actually stays alive in the water. Because if you need to survive from the money that you derive from it, obviously there's going to be a conflict of interest. You won't stop the poaching because then you won't get any income. So that is one of the things. Have you thought about it, and can we possibly get a report on that, pros and cons maybe? Then I wanted you to talk about the recovery plans for the sectors abalone and rock lobster, and the DG says it was quite significant. Well, last time at our meeting we heard that our rock lobster was red flagged with the WWF, and that would mean that people are encouraged not to eat it. And that was due to an agreed-upon plan which was unilaterally disregarded. I need to hear your comment on that, and what is our MSC certification? Is that under threat now? There are so many questions, Chairperson. I want to ask about, I'll skip to the very important one before I get cut off. On page 75 of this report, you talk about the annual targets. And on page 75, there's a very interesting thing. It talks about research report to indicate fish stock levels compiled. Now, Chairperson, that report cost us 185 million rand on this. I mean, that is nearly as much as what Nkandla cost us. Nearly as much, I say, because Nkandla was much more. But this is a lot of money. I just want to put it in perspective. This report must be made of gold. I want to see this report. Please, Chairperson, we must ask for it. And then 30 operations at 47 million rand. The DG is telling us that they have overspent. I can see exactly where you have overspent. It's the fisheries department. How could you have let it happen? I mean, surely if you go overspend, you need special permission for it. You can't just let it happen. I mean, they are 200% overspent, they have spent 200% of their budget. And this 185 million rand for a report is part of it. I think you should go and dig there and find out where that 185 million rand went. Because it can't be in a report. I'm telling you. Must I now finish? I still have four or five questions. The one that's important is, the one that's very important about that, please allow me, is this inshore trawl court case that we are having at the moment. The department was interdicted and it leads to the allocation, the recovery plans and everything that we have and the responsible allocation of fishing rights. And again, we have the same situation here. There are jobs, there's an industry that is working, and we should not destroy it to think we can rebuild it again. You must work on a way that complements each other. I mean, surely these people, the example of the kelp I use, they would want to buy from the people or help them, the cooperatives, but they don't know where to go now because those have not been allocated. They're just hanging there in the middle of nowhere. So maybe we should look at the interim measure to see if we can look at that.
Thanks, Chair. I will raise many questions within 5 minutes. At the beginning, the Chairperson asked you about the audit action plan. And you said it is in the report. Now, I was trying to look for it. Something that is nearer to the audit action plan is what is on page 54, the risk management. Is that what you are referring to when you are saying it is in the report? If this is not what you are referring to, the committee took a decision that in each and every quarter when you report, you must also report a progress on the implementation of the audit action plan. And that we want. The second question is just on the validation or verification of information. We have previously raised a serious matter about the monitoring and evaluation, that branch must do its work. And you have taken 20 million from CASP to MNE. But you are still having a problem with validation. What is the exact problem? Is it because of capacity? You can't say it's resources because you have given them 20 million. And have you spent that 20 million? And if you did spend that 20 million, on what exactly? Because you are still experiencing the same problem in this area. The second question is on the strategic risk register, which could not be reviewed due to the unavailability of the lead stakeholder. Who is this lead stakeholder? Because I thought that you had said in your presentation that on the 17th to the 18th of November 2016, you had a consultative conference with stakeholders to talk about a number of issues. But you are still saying you could not do this work because the lead stakeholder was unavailable. Is there a difference between the two, or which stakeholder are you referring to in this instance? The other question is on the primary health care clinics. We have procured 32 of those. We have delivered 15 of those. 17 of those clinics are not yet delivered. Where are they? And why are you not delivering those clinics? But secondly, the 15 that you have delivered, can you be specific? How many in each province? I want to know in KwaZulu-Natal you have delivered 2, in the Northwest 1, and so on. Can you be specific on that one in order for us to understand? Then there is one thing that worries me. It's on the expenditure or your failure to spend on the Agri-BEE fund. I think it's about 38 million or so. What is the problem? Why are you not spending this fund? Because this is very important to all of us and so on, and I wouldn't want to motivate because I don't have time, unfortunately. The last question, Chair. Support for smallholder producers. You, in terms of your APP, 80,000 smallholder producers should receive support for production efficiency. And your report says you have overachieved. Is that overachievement related to production efficiency, or what are you talking about? Because I can tell you now, if it's related to production efficiency, it means we have dealt with hunger in this country. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Fortunately, my colleagues have taken some of my questions. But the first one was just, I wanted to get some comfort in the reference to the insufficient rains, that is October, November, December 2016. If I can be convinced that that can be, it is real. But now the other one is on this issue of demand-driven, that is on slide 27. The reference there, I wanted to understand if because of that the request became more, does it mean that you had to use more or additional funding, or you had to take funding from the fourth quarter? And then next one, on slide 25, where you talk of 5 cooperatives and also 32 cooperatives. In this case, do you have any interaction with the department, small business development cooperatives, which also involved in a cooperative, so as to see if there's any intergovernment relations that is assisting our people on the ground there? The other one is linked to what Maloy was saying, the one of the vehicles. But my question in this case was that now that out of 32, 15 were delivered, I wonder if that would still be the case. Technically, it's proper to say, because it was the report of third quarter. But from an oversight point of view, it would be interesting to say that is history. All of them have been distributed now, if that be the case. But if not, maybe that will be explained. And then another one also is listed with one of Honorable, this one of the drought of the, that drought relief of 210 and 198 from provinces, which gives you 400 million. Whether that has been spent during third quarter or during quarter three. But if not, I wouldn't wonder why. But now that money, it means then, therefore, because it was for that trust, it has been allocated. The last one is on Operation Pakisa. Do I get comfort that on Operation Pakisa, you are taking the upper hand on this one, as to be sure that you are not overwhelmed by land reform, or because they've been on this ground for some time? I just need that comfort that you are taking the upper hand on this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. My feeling is that the main reason for the department's inability to effect some of the programs is its failure to coordinate the efforts that would result in that. And this is the reason why I'm saying so. I've been reliably informed that in the Transkei area, 80% of the wheat that is being consumed there comes from Western Cape as well as KZN. These are commercial farmers that supply the area. And we're talking there about an economy of 2 billion rands. And it's only about 20% that is actually produced there. Now, if you link up, you would find that actually Transcar has got enough land to produce 2 billion rands worth of veggies to be consumed there. And the economy would go up. So the question is, are you doing enough efforts there? And I'm saying this because of the assessment that's been done internally shows that one of the reasons why you're not getting off the ground is because the Comprehensive Africa Agri Development Program is not taking off simply because some of the stakeholders failed to come to the table for 6 months and you can't get them to come to the table. Is that a situation worth keeping? So it's a management situation more than anything else. It's not as if there's no capacity or there are no funds in the country. You say that on page 25 that there are five commodities, commodity-based co-ops that have been established. It's still around the same question. Question is, what are these commodities and in which way do you expect them to impact socially on the one hand, economically on the other hand? Have you done your arithmetic to say if these commodities, which we want to know what they are, if they are successful, they will impact socially, hunger will be reduced by a certain percentage. The second last one, Chair, it's about the commercialization of black farmers. We don't seem to be getting anywhere there. This report reminds me of a report that was tabled to this committee 3 years ago, always about great plans, we're going to do ABC, you're going to do ABC, and we don't seem to be actually getting the results. Great plans, always very nice, very, very nice plans. Exactly 3 years, as it was 3 years ago. The last one, Chair, is it's a question of management, of state-managed forests. Very critical area, you know, of revenue generation. Very ideal for the mainly illiterate people, and all they need is for the government to come to the party in an effective manner. Again, critical stakeholders are not availing themselves, failing the very people that put this government into power. Just can't get together. We're talking about people who are salaried, people who have been appointed, people who are there for no other reason except to be of service to the people of South Africa. They just can't get together in order for the natural resources of this country to be exploited for the benefit of the poor and the hard-pressed 11 million who hardly have any food to eat on any given day. So I'm putting the ball square back in your court to say, how strategies are you going to put together as a department to make sure that there is effective management of all these institutions that are already existing? And this is my kind question to you. We would love to have a positive answer, not a repeat of what we had 3 years ago, that this and that is going to be done. What are you going to do this year to do to make it happen? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, VG, for the presentation. On page 23, I just want to make sure, because I know for a fact that in most rural areas there was a lot of rain in December and January. I just want to make sure that if the department is ready to, or was ready, because it's past tense now, planted that areas and plowed those areas and planted the areas, because especially with the equipment, you know, the tractors and the planters, are they in working in all provinces in a working condition? That's the first question. The second question, Madam Chair, is on page 26, I think. Where's that? 100%. Page 26, Chair. The 100 hectares of state indigenous forest rehabilitated. 100% also always sounds too good to be true. And I learn from life that when something sounds
too good to be true, it's normally good, too good to be true. So if they can just give us more information on the 100%, you know, if it was 103% or 97%, I can understand it, but 100%, it's a bit not believable. And then on page 25, the cooperatives supported with training, and we talk about 30 per quarter. So it's roughly 120 per year. So I would like, Chair, through you, to ask the DG if the department think it's enough cooperatives to train per annum to reach the targets of the NDP in 2030. And then my last question, Chair, is about the finances. And I don't know if you must ask the finances because apparently there's a new report or a more comprehensive report coming to this committee, but I don't understand the last columns on page 70, 71 and 72 and 73, those actual, the total actual, the percentage on the bottom of the page, if you just look at program 1, is 20%. Is it 20% of the total budget, or is it 20% of the actual achievement of over the three quarters? In other words, what I'm saying is, it 20% out of 75%? Because when I add this up and I try to understand and make sense of this, it doesn't make up. So if the DG just can give us some clarity there, what is that 20% exactly means? Thank you, Chair. I think that was 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DG, for the presentation. DG, I'm especially interested in the 1 million hectares of land unutilized that will be under production by 2019. And I think your department needs some help there, because if you've only accomplished 26.1% by now, I don't think you're going to get it right to get the other 738,000-plus hectares done by 2019. Do you have an idea as to where these pockets of land are situated? And is it owned by the state, or what is the status of this land? Because it seems as if the department sees agriculture only as something that happens in rural areas. Cape Town, for example, has got a Philippi horticultural area, which is very unique in the sense that despite us having being in a drought situation, The Philippi horticultural area is situated on an aquifer, underground lake, and they're not affected by drought or by the drought condition in the Cape. So I know that the minister has visited the area once, but also this area is under threat by the City of Cape Town that wants to pave over and build houses. So what sort of what is the department prepared to do to assist the small scale farmers in Philippi that produce 150,000 tons of food within the city, which is very unique? There's no other place in the world where a city like Cape Town or a cosmopolitan city as a bread basket right within the city. So that's the one thing. The land, we need to know where it is. You won't be able to distribute that land on your own. We can come up with ways as to how you can be assisted by 2019 to have 100 million, or that, what, 1 million hectares cultivated and owned by small-scale farmers. And also, in terms of the Philippi horticultural area, what is the department doing to assist those small-scale farmers and save the area from urban creep. And also, we got representation from the Poultry Association of South Africa, or the South African Poultry Association, last week. And if we were to re-establish our poultry industry, at present there's an established market for poultry. It's not as if it's something new. And there are almost 50,000 people out of work because of an industry that has gone down. And one of the solutions they suggested is that poultry farming needn't be these massive poultry farms, but it can be many small farmers, small-scale poultry farmers, that enters the market and supplies the market. So what are we doing as a department to revitalize this poultry industry? Because typically what has happened, similar to the textile industry, in the beginning you got cheap Chinese imports, 10 rand a t-shirt or 5 rand, and it puts the local producers can't compete. Eventually they close down and immediately the price of a Chinese t-shirt is what you would have paid here anyway. Same with chicken. They flooded our markets with cheap chicken, killed our industry, and now the price of imported chicken is even more expensive than what locally produced chicken would have cost. So what are we going to do to help local farmers to actually come back into or to rebuild the poultry industry locally? Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, wait, one last one. You know, for the past 3 years, I've been asking this because around the world, half of the fish that is consumed is produced through aquaculture. In South Africa, they say less than 1% of the fish that we consume is aquaculture. So we don't have an aquaculture industry. Once again, an opportunity to create jobs, build a new industry, empower working class black people. And we're not doing anything about it. There's so many opportunities, especially in agriculture, to eliminate poverty. And these are all the opportunities that are available that we are not grabbing with both hands. And I don't know where the problem lies. You know, because is it because there's too much influence from big fishing companies, big food producing companies, that our nutrition has to be commodified, that we have to pay for our food rather than produce it ourselves? You know, we can really limit or eliminate the nutritional insecurity, because we are not food insecure. There is enough food. Just us poor people can't afford to pay for it, so we're nutritionally insecure. It's because we, that ability to produce our own food is taken away from us. So I think this is should be the ultimate mandate of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, is to get people to produce their own food. Far more than creating a market for food producers to benefit from something so essential to every human being. We have to eat to live. You don't eat, you die. And we can't pay these skyrocket prices for food just to survive. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm still left some few minutes. Honorable Mapanga, you can finish your question. That last question. Oh.
I didn't see your hands, I'm sorry. I can wait. Honorable Tongwane and Honorable Sevekul. Honorable Mapanga, you can wait. I'll see if I'm still in the time. Okay, Honorable Tongwane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, my question is on slide 39 and 40 regarding the fall armyworm. On the last bullet point of slide 39, it is indicated that of the 9 provinces, 2, which is the Eastern Cape and Western Cape, are not mentioned. Now what I wanted to find out is if it can be confirmed that these 2 provinces are free from the fall armyworm. And again on the following slide, it is indicated that 15 of the 31 ingredients are registered. Must we take that the other 16 ingredients are on the process of registration at the moment? And lastly, Chair, the fall armyworm battle be won, seeing that it is spreading rapidly? Is it a battle that the department can win? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted just to raise a question regarding land rehabilitation. Chairperson, my understanding is that not only the Department of Agriculture that is dealing with the land challenge when it comes to the growing of bushes and alien plants in our communal land. Rural development as well is part of this, as well as the Environmental Affairs Department. One has just been seeing that there is no good coordination between or amongst the 3 departments regarding dealing with the land rehabilitation issue. Chairperson, one may come up with a challenge regarding assisting the communal land farmers who only use land for subsistence farming in order to feed their families and their next of kin. What is the department actually doing in order to fast track those projects? Because obviously it seems the fields or grazing fields is not being looked after properly, as well as the land rate for plowing or the plowing fields. And Chairperson, again, I want just to point out another challenge that one has been seeing. According to the presentation, something is being done with regards to animal health practitioners. But one has been seeing the mushroom of the animal diseases in areas of the north of KwaZulu-Natal, King Pejoa district, as well as Mkanyawood, where we've seen lumpy skin disease mushrooming in the livestock of the communal livestock owners. And very little is being done there, except that people are told to go and buy from the, what do you call this, coastal farmers, medication for treatment of their livestock. Whereas we previously used to see the department sending the vets to treat the animals in the dipping tanks. Currently, you know, some people don't have enough, and if you can look at maybe a homestead owner who only has 3 head of cattle, if he can be expected to sell one in order to get medication for the 2 that are remaining. For them, it's very difficult to do it or to part with the legal debt that they have. We're only relying and hoping that the department is always there to assist. What is the department doing in that regard? Having distributed the vehicles that are meant to assist, but how many of the beds that are being deployed in areas in order to assist the communities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Kosi. Honorable Mathanga.
Thanks, Chair. I've been covered by Honorable Toko, and I wanted to articulate on the issues of the fall armyworms. So I'm covered. Thanks.
Honorable Fandal, you said you have another question. Then ask for one.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, for that opportunity. I was just getting to the other part where I wanted to talk about the drought relief and everything, but I just got to the fishery side. And I wanted to,
but the drought has been rising. Are you not covered?
No. No, I mean, the department comes here and they tell us that they have spent the money. I actually read in the media that the money was not spent. So I would like to know where the confusion is. Is the money spent or is it not? Does the media have it wrong? Do you have it right? And then maybe we can get a report on it. Where was the money spent? Who was it spent on? So we can go visit those places and see what the difference is. And I want to come back to the boreholes that was drilled during the drought. Where are they? Are they working? Are they working properly? How much water are they supplying? You know, are the people having are we getting value for money? That's what we want to know here. And then the budget as a, the other question was on the outcomes, how much money was spent as a percentage and how much of the targets was reached, but I see that's on the large page, so I was covered there. And the other one...
I said one, but now we are two.
I told you I have a lot of questions, but...
No.
But then there was the other one, which is the last one left over, and it's on the fishing harbors and the communities around the fishing harbors that are poor and the bad state of these fishing harbors at the moment. I mean, in Hut Bay we have those sunken vessels. The place can't be used by the local people to go fishing because it's blocked by the ships, and the Department of Fisheries is responsible for it. What are you doing to fix it? You say you have spent money on it to revamp it and you are proclaiming more. But, maybe we should also get a report on those fishing harbors. Madam Chair, it's very important because the poor people are living around it and they want to make a living from it and they can't. Why can't they? What are prohibiting them from doing that? I mean, those are what we want to do with cooperatives, to help the people to fish and not to, you know, they must eat.
Thank you, Honorable Fanda. Program 5. Out of 11 planned target, there are 2 below 6. And the reason given is that none of the availability of the task team. And that is a reason even for the second quarter. This is a it's a reason that you have given in the previous quarter, the second quarter. It's still the same reason. And by the way, Program 5 has not been achieving, has not been spending their money, has not been achieving their targets. So it's a continuation, DG. can we get the reason why this task team is not available? Are they staying? What is happening? Because it has been a reason given even in the last quarter report. On Operation Pagisa, honorable members, I know that. I think it will be good if we get the proper presentation, because DG has spoken about on the 21 initiatives. We must understand how do they link to the APEP, and so can I then suggest that next week we've invited FAO to come and FAO to come and so you stay from the, your team is in the right hand side. So we've invited FAO to come and interact with us around issues of climate change, how they assist countries to manage even the outbreaks of diseases and all those things. So I think it will be important that we request the department or DPME to come and present PAKISA so that we understand these initiatives, how do they link with the APEP, and do we have money? If we've got a lot of shortfall now, launching PAKISA, does it help us to resolve those challenges? So I'm saying questions that have been raised, can we agree that we'll have that presentation in the next meeting? the issue that Honorable Matali has raised on the drought at Bandale, you know, it's just I'm confused with this money come from, because in the meeting that we had, we've invited the department and the land bank and farmers when we're dealing with this issue. And the minister reported that they've said, is it 20% or 10% that of CAF must be given to farmers for intervention. And the Treasury availed 400 million for the drought for smallholder farmers. And in that meeting, if you remember, honorable members, the organization of the smallholder farmers, they were saying 1% of their farmers were able to access that 400 million because of the requirements and the prescripts that are required by land bank. So as we talk about this drought money and land bank, we should get clarity which one we are talking about. The one that we had farmers say they cannot access them. So where is that intervention happened? So I think we need to get that clarity. And we want to welcome the interaction with province in a way to realign the program. But I think the most critical one and important, it should be within yourselves and the other department at national and your entity, state entities, so that as you interact with provinces, the work is coordinated to those provinces, including local municipalities, because in some instances, because intergovernmental relations is very important, particularly for agriculture, because it's a concurrent function. So we welcome that initiative, and we would want to see it going vertically and horizontal, so that we're able to maximize the performance and the effectiveness of our operation. the issue of report coming to us without validation, it's a problem. Particularly because we have approved money for monitoring and evaluation. So maybe we should be told at some point we need to get the feedback in terms of the structure of this monetary evaluation in the department, as Honorable Maloui has indicated, because it's a problem. Fetzatlan, this is my beloved program, which had, this program had the objective to achieve. So besides targeting land, making land productive at, in the communal area, one of other objectives was to create market for smallholder farmers, and there was a program, which this program was linked to the World Food Organization, where smallholders were producing maize for other countries where there is shortage. And at that time, we're told it's going to be a long-term program. And yeah, it disappeared in your program, this thing of it's disappearing after the launch of Fitzgerald. In the process, this one in particular of smallholder farmers increasing production, and you get market for them for as you indicated. And it's very worrisome, because every now and every year you made president to pronounce. Now you're going to have the 450 commercialization, but you still have this colored, the debt of creating market for these ones in the. So and you are not even giving feedback. You make president to announce programs like they are new when they are old. So in the process, the feedback is becoming confused. So the issue of the Mafisa, I'm not sure it's yourself or it's the DPME who owes us a report, which links to Agri-BEE performance. I'm not sure whether it's yourself, Dr. Mania, or it's DPME. You owe a report. You owe us a report on the Mafisa. So I'm not sure it's yourself or it's the DPME who are supposed to give us the report, the feedback. And I thought even with this program of Fetzatlala and Ilimalizima, you'll just indicate, because we are from the rain. Actually, you'll just say part of imagining things that we have managed to plant so many hectares for now. So you just talk about like they are nothing is happening. We must get it from the newspapers that tomorrow might get somebody say agriculture has planted 200 hectares. When we are sitting here with you, you don't tell us. Tell us how far have you gone with the planting system? What were the challenges so that they don't get disappeared in the system of reporting. And DM, you're welcome to the meeting. So.
Thank you, Chair. Fortunately, I've got the experts next to me, the each of the program. That's why they are here. I'm sure also they've noted the questions. But I think I will consolidate later, but there are those, like what Honorable Mr. Matale asked. I think that I may have to answer right, clear, give clarity on it right away, and then hand over to my colleagues on the others, Chair. I think the first one is it's about over budget and stuff and that we're given. I think that was, by the way, is something that we're working on for submission to the study group. we're working on it. And I think it was a request that was made, but really I was not emphasizing it. I was just, by the way, mentioning it. The one about the rest, it really never meant anything about the oversight except to say all the programs that we're doing, we're reporting here, are programs that we must ensure that are implemented. And indeed, when you're outside, you said, why this program? People are always in meetings. When do they do these things? So it was not in reference to anything other than to say that agency I'm burning inside to go there, to go out there, that's what I know. And indeed, you can report everything nice here. In the ground, nothing is happening. It really has been, it's something that I wish I could do without saying, oversight is very important in my life. The questions that are raised here are awake questions that are making us awake and understand that we need to improve. I think that's how I see it. So it never had any implications to the oversight at all. It was just a desire and burning inside to go outside. That's all I was mentioning by then. Thank you, sir. On the question that was asked, the initial question, I'll hand over to my colleagues here.
Thank you, teaching. Thank you, honorable members. There was a question on the 30 million that Treasury has taken away from the department from the compensation of employees. For the 2016-17 financial year, which is the current financial year, Treasury has imposed a ceiling on compensation of employees and also throughout the MTEF period. Now, with that, with the ceilings now being imposed, when we looked at the outer years, it meant that the department will not be in a position to fill all its vacant positions with the allocated amount. And now, even though at 2016-17 we may be able to fill, but going forward we will not have enough funding to pay for the filled positions. So there were delays in filling some of those positions. Now, with the shortfalls that we were experiencing in the other areas, we then wrote to Treasury requesting them to release some of the money for the 2016-17 on compensation of employees, considering that in the outer years, if this, some of the positions are filled, we will not have the money to fund the shortages. What Treasury did, took the money to fund the other areas. From their side, they said they also had shortfalls. Hence, then they took away the 30 million. And then there was a question on the percentages, DG, if you allow me that, I may as well take that question. On slide 71, how did we get to the 20%? The totals, there we have totals for targets and the total budget allocated to the relevant program. Now the 20% is what was the target for that program against the total budget. If we go at slide 70 and your program 1, there was 129,500 million, that was the four targets, against the total budget of 662,383,000. And if you take the percentage of that, then it gives you the 20%. And that's all from my side, DJ.
1 million hectares of unutilized land to be utilized this quarter. And that is, we do have details of where that land is. By and large, we do understand that subsistence farmers have been using the communal land for gardening, not necessarily for planting. Now, we want to get in partnership with them. The chiefs, we have been discussing with them. There is a rollout of macadamia trees in the former homeland of Transkei, Chief Dumalisile, Chief, all those chiefs, all the way from the coast, the Kai, all the way to Port St. John's. They are using that land for macadamia trees. And some of them, inclusive of Maguati Estate, for example, they are using there to plant avocados, to plant a number of things. But that is done fundamentally to empower the people within those areas, so that as we leave the project, there is a skill that we ensure that that project is sustained. But I think Mr. Manye wanted to add.
Thank you, DG, Chair, and honorable members. The 1 million hectares, indeed, we have a sense of where they are, both in the communal areas in the and the land reform farms. The in terms of the communal areas, we would all know that the previous settlements were actually settling those communities in very marginal soils. And if you farm marginal soils under dryland conditions, you will always find what you get from the yields in rand and cent, it's by far less than what you invest. Theoretically, if you were to plant the 1 million hectares on the grains at a cost, the current cost of 8,500 rand per hectare, you perhaps need to invest 8.5 billion to do the 1 million hectares. And if you are planting the grains, you likely have to invest almost something near to that every year. And that's where we're looking, as we currently support using Ilimalitima and CASP, portion of CASP, which is totally inadequate. We are actually revisiting the models, and the Pakisa had a grains work stream, and they estimate you would require about 5.07 billion to be invested in the grains and do that towards sustainable, so that at some point you don't have to invest into those. So we are looking at those models, and we'll have to separate when you produce grains for own consumptions and grains for the market, because those who are producing grains for the market, they may not need to be assisted continually. But those who are producing grains for own consumptions, they may have to continue to be supported on an ongoing basis. Perhaps, Honorable Chair, on the World Food Program that we worked with previously, that opportunity on the one side provided training for market readiness, and we are working with the World Food Program to see how we could expand that. The market has not necessarily come through again. The last time we supported Lesotho, we haven't gotten any again, but we're talking with DERCO that on the humanitarian programs, we would want to make sure that the grains are procured from within the country. DG, perhaps I should run through those questions related to my program with your permission. On the issue of the verification, members, I just want to give an indication. We provide the conditional grants, the provinces implement. And once they've implemented, they must provide us with the numbers of what they've achieved. They must provide us with a means of verification. And once we receive the means of verification, we have to go through, firstly, the verification of the ID numbers. Are these people real people? We found out when we ran through this with the system of Home Affairs, where Auditor General already has access. We're using that access facility. We found in some cases some of the ID numbers are either incorrect, or some of the people are said to have died, and there have been various explanations. In some cases, because the fields in the communal areas may have been registered in the name of the parent, and when they access the support, they use that. But in other cases, we believe there may have been something wrong. So we
always would want to verify even the ID numbers that the person we've given is a South African citizen, indeed is alive. Unfortunately, there are alignment issues that we need to resolve. All of us, the national departments and provincial departments, are required by law to submit at the same time. Now, on the transversal indicators, we are not implementing, the province are implementing. They would want to verify themselves, and particularly in this quarter when preliminary audits are being done by Auditor General, they were saying they're holding back on the means of verification until they are audited before they could make that provision. And we're trying to make that alignment. It affects the conditional grants also because all of us must submit at the same time, whereas we have to provide the oversight. We require them to populate their means of verification before we can go out and verify. If it's physical projects, we have to sample some of them and go and see them physically. And this is where the delay is. And in this particular quarter, it has been largely because the province were arguing they are being audited by the AG and they would want to hold on to their means of verification before that. But we are looking for a better way, and we're asking Treasury to revisit the reporting time on the to stagger the reporting times on the conditional grants so that the provinces could report earlier on the conditional grants. But we are believing that we will do that within this 90 days that it's allowed for us. On there was a question on the mechanization, the level of readiness. In quarter two, we had already asked the provinces to indicate their level of readiness for the planting season. But members would also be reminded that although we have had good rains until now, the predictions were completely and were not promising very clearly whether there would be rain. And the risk always is if you buy the seeds and it doesn't rain, you don't use them, it's fruitless expenditure. You buy the seeds with the uncertain predictions that we have and the rain comes, in terms of our procurement system, you're not able to run quickly for the provinces to procure in time and deliver. That has also, of course, in some cases even affected the provision of feed. But in terms of the mechanization, the most province that had a difficulty because their maintenance budget was completely inadequate was in Mpumalanga. They have a most number of tractors, but not all of them were in a running conditions. I think the province as a whole, all the provinces are affected by the fact that their maintenance budgets are not adequate. And we're actually busy revisiting and part of the mechanization policy proposals we're bringing. It's whether government would want to run mechanization units in the absence of dedicated mechanization companies or SOEs of government. Because if it is the departments running those with limited staff, now with the limitations on the employment of officers, the provinces are unable to maintain those mechanization units. And the question is whether we should continue to do that. But we're providing various options. And we have also done costing, and we've found it's very costly for government to keep the mechanization units, but that we should find alternatives in partnerships, and that's what Pakisa is also proposing that we look at. Chair, I on the impact evaluations were done. I may not remember who was requested on the Mafisa, but Mafisa was evaluated, CASP was evaluated, the recapitalization was evaluated. We have worked on the improvement plan, which is almost ready. We would want to integrate it into Pakisa before we take it back to Cabinet, and we can do a presentation on the findings of those evaluation studies and what we are, how we are responding in the improvement plan. I believe I...
Okay, gentlemen, you have to put the Pakisa thing on the validation of improvement, because this thing of IT thing that must take so long. It's not acceptable. Because you have 30 days to present your report to Treasury, and you came here after 2 months of you submitted the report to Treasury. There is no reason why you don't give us the validated report, because you're supposed to have gone direct to those issues as we've raised them, because already you've prepared the report to Treasury. By the way, we know that you are reporting to Treasury, to MME, to PME, so it's no longer a difficult process for you to consolidate and firm on issues that these honorable members might have asked. So the issue of the ID that look been verified for 6 months, it will be a problem, really, in terms of service delivery. You just have to put this program into Pakisa, all of it, so that it will then Pakisa indeed, so that you have people who will run to Home Affairs and go and punch the ID and get whether it's correct or wrong. So not follow that process. I get Pakisa, it says use the shortcut to get to the right direction. So I think you have to have your GPIS in your program. Did you?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I'm just latching on to what Mr. Manya was saying. Honorable Chair, we're still wrestling with government reporting mechanism. It is not aligned, and we have communicated this to DPME, and even National Treasury are aware. And this is the problem. The questions which the Honorable Whip and yourself asked in terms of the validation relates to transversal indicators, which are the responsibility of provinces. Provinces report on this. But if you look at the fact that we have to play an oversight role, provinces report to their premier's offices, and then from premier's offices, those reports are directed directly to DPME and not to us. Now, in terms of the reporting procedure, everybody must report 30 days after the quarter has ended. Everybody must report. And everybody is given 90 days after the quarter has ended to shall have submitted every piece of evidence in support of what she has reported on. And the delays, Honorable Chair and members, are caused by this disjuncture where provinces have to report directly to their premier's offices and their premier's offices to DPME and not directly to DAF. So it causes a delay. But on the issue of validations, I would like to say the report which we are presenting to honorable members is based on the timing for the request of such a report by the honorable members. For example, we still have an opportunity to report at the end of 90 days after the quarter has ended. We are focusing on quarter three now, but the report we are tabling now in terms of legislation is called preliminary report. After 90 days, we talk of a validated report, which is now the final report. Everybody is given an opportunity. For example, Mr. Manya talked about the issue of the IDs, and then Honorable Chair followed up on that one. Where we are talking about farmer-supported
for example, so many farmers have been supported. When provinces report on this, they also indicate the number, I mean the names of those farmers that have been supported, their ID numbers, the attendance register, and so forth and so forth. Now, previously it was a nightmare to us as staff in terms of this, because we would accept that information as true, that okay, these are the ID numbers that we have received from provinces or farmers that have been supported. But we were embarrassed, because later when the Auditor General went on to audit that information, it was discovered that those ID numbers belong to deceased people, or some of them were not valid, and so forth. But Chair, I may give the honorable members the comfort that we have since devised a new strategy as staff. We don't have a system of running IDs, you know, through a machine. We don't have that system. So we have since engaged the Department of Home Affairs to enter into an agreement with them. Also, we have negotiated with the Department of Public Works, because they also have that system, to say, can we arrange that as and when we receive reports from provinces each quarter, we send these ID numbers to you so that you run them through the system so that you validate them for us. We don't get embarrassed after the financial year has come to an end, and it is the AG who discovers that actually those ID numbers are not valid. So I just wanted to explain that one, Chair, to say your question and your concern is actually valid. We are wrestling with this disjuncture on reporting, which is currently in place in government, where provinces report to DPME and don't report to the departments which is having responsibility, oversight responsibility over them. Thanks.
You know, that's a worrisome DG, because you can't be expected to report to Treasury yourself when the provinces, they report direct to DPME when they get conditional grants from yourself. It's a problem that needs to be picked up and be resolved as soon as possible. And I think we should look at whether we can't, like any other conditional grant, if we don't get report, then people must not get their money. So that you are able to report, because we can't give people money and then we don't get reports. And you expected, how do you report to Treasury yourself? Because Treasury expects to report every 3 months from yourself. If they report direct to DPME, not yourself, it's a problem. And it's deliberate, because the concurrent function is very key. And even the equitable, division of revenue is very clear. Provinces, they got their share, which they must report on. National, they got their share, which they must report on. And if there are conditional grants, which is a national fund, they will be reported through the department. And therefore, if provinces have to be implementers, because in this case, they are implementers of your program, they must report to you. If they don't, let's get other mechanisms and see how we can we can continue to support farmers without having these hackles from the province. Because that issue needs to be corrected. Let's lift it up, DG and DM, so that you are able to look at how best can we deal with that. You can continue with responding of other questions.
Thank you, Chair. I think the one that I've just run into is the one on drought. First, the selection of beneficiaries on drought is done at provincial level. For within, they know best their farmers than us, Mr. Matali. The other one is the issue of the report around drought and boreholes. I'm pleased to inform you, Mr. Adam, that from Dami, that we have got the report right with me. It was requested before. I got the report on boreholes, where they are, how are they equipped. It was an old issue. Similarly, the report on the distribution of drought, how much and where and all that. That report is part of what I have with me in anticipation of those type of questions. Mr. Ndombele, talk on the compensation. 622, now is 611.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and DGDM, Honorable Members. The question was on the staff establishment that has decreased during the quarter from 6,201 to 6,152. This basically is related to the compensation of employees budget, for the caps that are put on that budget. As a result, it means that you have, every time a vacancy appears, you have to answer the question whether you do need to fill that vacancy. So it puts pressure on the on your staff establishment. As a result, that for you to stay within the ceiling that has been prescribed by National Treasury, you have to prioritize the positions that you have, and as a result, sometimes abolish others. So that is why the staff establishment keeps on decreasing. So it will happen in the future. In a way, I may say that what Treasury wants out of these caps is for us to look at the numbers that we have in the department. Do we really need those positions? And if you don't need those positions, then you need to do away with them. In other words, your work, you do more with less. So hence the decrease in the staff establishment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ndombele. Thank you. We'll pass on to fisheries issues. The DDG will respond to that. But I think it's important just to emphasize that the issues of abalone fund, we are not using abalone sales, if you will, to fund the department. That's not true. I think it has been in the media quite a lot. I just want to put it on record and perhaps once and for all give the chair documentation to that effect. But the DDG responsible for fisheries is here. Over to you, Spokas.
Thank you, DG, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will just run through quickly the questions as quickly as I can, but try to maybe perhaps explain, because I think it will be important to give some background, because it would be easy that other things can be misinterpreted as to be facts while they are actually not. The last question was on the aquaculture issue. It was not a question per se. It was, I agree fully with everything that the Honorable Member Paulson has indicated. However, I think it's also important to note that in the countries that there is high production of aquaculture, there is also high consumption of fish by the citizens of that country. South Africa is currently sitting at about 8 kilogram consumption per capita. China is at about 48 kilogram. Japan is 98 kilograms per capita. So in Japan, fish is served during breakfast, fish is served in lunch, in snacks, in dinner. So the people eat the fish. So in South Africa, while we talk the production, we also need to equally talk the consumption by the people of that country. I think if we were to take a quick quiz, Honorable Paulson, and first begin with yourself to ask how many days a week you eat fish, we may get an impression of where we stand as a country. The question, I think Honorable Njai said was yourself that asked this question on page 27, slide 27, in terms of the demand-driven, that overachievement there that we indicated in terms of the Operation Pagisa projects of aquaculture support of that. The question was, have we used monies that were meant for the fourth quarter to support those? And the answer is no, because our support of Operation Pagisa projects is not only in monetary terms, it is also at skills level, so and expertise. For instance, if a particular farmer or fish wants to do, for instance, environmental impact assessment, we assist them for those, identification of suitable species. So we don't necessarily do it in monetary terms. So obviously, that overachievement there did not impact at all on the budget of the following quarter, which was quarter four. The questions that came from Honorable Van Dalen. Honorable Van Dalen, yes. Let me begin perhaps with the last of your question, because I think it's important to also explain why we do what we do. The reports you are talking about there, the 185 million, it is not the report itself that is treasured there. It is the data that informs those reports that is treasured. Now, what is this data? Fisheries management is about the sustainability of the resource. We need to know which fish gives birth or spawn where, how the growth of that fish or that shoal of fish is happening, then that informs the setting of the total allowable catches. Because basically what we're trying to do is to make sure that we fish for the future. So to get that data is the most precious thing. We use vessels to go to sea to get that data. Now let me give you an explanation. Our research vessel, the Africana, we've got two research vessels. The Africana takes 450 ton of fuel, and that tank fills up for 6 million, and that tank lasts you for 28 days. Now, we go to sea to gather that data at least four times for the deep sea hake trawl, for instance, for the pelagics, because we must go to sea around April when the fish has just given birth, to see how the fish is going. We must go in November when the fish is kind of recruiting, we know the essence in terms of how the fishery is going to look like. So the report, as I say, is not just the paper. It is the data that informs what fish must be fished. Now, absolutely you're correct. It is very expensive. It's extremely expensive to keep a vessel at sea. It is fuel. It has got personnel. It must have a principal scientist. It must have other scientists. It must have engineers. It must have a doctor on board in case somebody gets sick. And it cannot leave the shore without that critical personnel that it needs for it to operate. And this is ASAMSA requirements, by the way. So we can't circumvent that and say, let's go with half the crew size, let's go without an engineer. Things do break down there at sea, most especially when there's rough weather and everything. So you can't bring an engineer from land by helicopter. It gets even more expensive to do that. So those are kind of the expenses that go with that. As I've explained, it's important we do that. But I think the question perhaps I was hoping you are going to get to, who should foot this bill? Because it is government currently that is subsidizing all of this. And it is not government that is making money from fishing. It is companies that are getting rich, You must see their offices, you must see their yards, you must see everything else. So it is companies that are getting rich. Question is, why is it government that is heavily subsidizing the gathering of this data? I think that will be a discussion for another day, but I think that should be the question that should be asked here. In terms of the Fisheries Department BA overspending, I'm not going to touch much on that one. I think from page 70, if you look from page 70 of the report, Fisheries has got a budget of 485 million. Look at other programs that are having some billions plus of budget, and I think program 4 is the least there, that's having about 278 million. So if you compare the size of the budget of Fisheries vis-a-vis other branches, it's literally not that big at all. And also remember that the budget of Fisheries operations budget is self-funded, the MRLF funds that. So it is not budget that comes from DAF. It is also only the cost of employment that comes from DAF. And also the vessel operation cost is equally subsidized by National Treasury in the form of a grant, as I have said. So it is not entirely true that Fisheries is causing over-expenditure in DAF at all. The issue of the recovery plans and the issue of the red listing of the West Coast rock lobster, I would want to leave that to DM to deal with the issue of the red listing of the abalone, I mean of the West Coast rock lobster. But I would like to bring you to Section 14 of the Marine Living Resources Act. Section 14 of the Act gives the prerogative completely to the hands of the Minister of the Republic to determine the TACs and TAEs. So I am not sure who was an agreement done with that the department unilaterally decided the TAC of the West Coast rock lobster, because by legislation it is only the department that can do that. So I'm not sure who that agreement was done with and how it was done and why did those expected that the department was going to do that in consultation with them. Obviously, when we set TACs, we have management working groups. We also have got scientific working groups. In those two sets of meetings, we call for interested parties like rights holders, we call for marketers of the resource, we call for other interested parties to sit in those meetings, and it's robust discussions where people put their views and everything, but absolutely the views that are put by whoever that sits either in the management working group or in the scientific working group are not gospel in their own. People bring different views there. We debate them in a robust manner, and we take the decision as the department. Sometimes we take into cognizance the inputs that they give. Sometimes we don't necessarily take all of the inputs that they give. But as I say, Section 14 of the MRLA gives the prerogative to the minister to set TACs. The issue of the MSC certification being under threat, my answer is no, because you may recall that it is only the Hague that is MSC certified in South Africa, something that is very strange, because we have got 22 commercial fisheries in South Africa, but only Hague is MSC certified. So now if you talk the West Coast rock lobster red listing, that obviously cannot affect the MSC certification, because the certification by MSC, it is only for Hake, not necessarily for any other species. The issue you are raising on the confiscation of abalone, DG has touched on that, and I want to agree with you. I can't actually dispute the issue that you are talking about. It is important in our management of abalone to bring on board the right holders. You are very correct, because there is only 96 ton that is official TAC for the right holders. But if you look at the confiscated abalone, it is way above that. I mean, a year we confiscate about 900 ton, for instance. But if TAC official is 96, there is no reason why we should look at ways of compensating those right holders, because they should have caught that fish instead so that it becomes part of the TAC. We are looking at ways of revamping the management structure
of abalone, including the communities where the abalone is poached itself. Because you may recall that some of the communities don't have legal rights to fish on their own. So obviously, if they are kept outside of the bracket, the problem may not necessarily be solved. And if we are focusing much more on policing, we may still not be solving the problem because the fish leaves the sea anyway. So we kind of need a combination and a balance of policing, policy review, and a adaptive management strategy. That absolutely, I fully agree with yourself. In terms of the revenue, no, we don't depend on the abalone for revenue. Our revenue for the MRLF comes from levies, it comes from rights holders, it comes from penalties and everything, and abalone only contributes no less than 10% to our total budget at fisheries. The issue about the small-scale fisheries and the kelp issue, this one, Honorable Chair, I think it is important that we retell the good story in a good way, because there is a temptation that this story is told in a negative manner. For the first time in South Africa, ever in the history of South Africa, in the community of Bafelsia and in other communities that are to follow, for the very first time ever in history, the state has decided to give the rights to harvest kelp, which is seaweed, to the community members. Now, a company that was previously there that was harvesting the rights for the many years, that company has not received the rights because under small-scale implementation, the state is saying, let the community members own the right and let the company partner with the community members, with the factory that the company may have, processing plant that the company may have, but let the company be a partner with the communities. This is a very good story. As I say, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, it has never happened in the history of South Africa. That's exactly what has happened in the Bafelsia issue. However, the challenge is that because the company does not hold the right, there's a little bit of hiccups here and there because there's a hope that they can appeal and get that right back. It is not going to come back. It is going to be in the hands of the communities. The company will have to work with the communities. However, we have received as a department an exemption in the period that the cooperatives are not yet ready. That is what is causing the challenge. And unfortunately, even the media is not focusing on what the challenge is. The challenge is that the cooperatives are not ready. And in that instance, the department is currently considering an exemption. So soon that place is going to become a business as usual because we are currently considering the exemption for that. The issue of the Hague Inshore Trawl court case, I cannot talk much, Chairperson, on this. It is a case that is before the courts of law. It is going to be heard on the 17th of April. But again, perhaps here I could use an analogy. The state gives you a house and gives you a five-bedroom house. The state comes back and say, of these five rooms, we need you to occupy three rooms so that we can give two rooms to the other people who also need rooms. Now you become angry and you throw your courts and your toys out of the court and you run to the courts because now government has borrowed two rooms of the five. It's not that you are left without a house or without a shelter. No, you have three rooms, but just that the two rooms are being borrowed. That is the scenario I can say in the issue of the Hague Inshore Trawl incidents. The matter is before the court, as I say. I can't talk much on that, but unfortunately, there is no exemption that can be given because the court has given a schedule of what can happen and what can't happen. So in that case, unfortunately, there is nothing that can be done. Thank you, Chair.
Misused, to say the least, and the consequence is that we needed to review it and ask the question as to who has been benefiting out of it. It was initially 300 million and now it's sitting at 100 million. and the land bank was overseeing that. The initial objective was to buy equity for small black producers. And the equities, as you know, suddenly increased dramatically. Wherever government is about to buy property, and the public knows about that, they increase it threefold. So we decided maybe let's stop this and revisit what it was for, what impact has it done, where is that other 200? I'm busy with that. The second review is around specifically Mafisa, in terms of what was it set for, how much is there. When I saw that it was 10 million there, against an original capitalization of 1 billion, and then when you ask, we don't know. It was given to smallholders. So we are putting an audit on that, so that we can track the efficacy of this fund. That's really the point. Once we have understood what these plans are, we then go back to the drawing board in the context of the new target and say, how do we support small growers in a manner that they become owners of this project? So that's about that. That's, we said it has to be stopped, so we did that. Audit action plan, I think that's a very important question, and I thought Mr. Roth will talk to that as chair of the audit committee, or as deputy, as the acting chair of the committee. I don't know whether we are ready to do that on the audit action plan.
To be quite honest with you, I haven't seen the current audit action plan in the last audit committee meeting. It is something that obviously will be reviewed on an annual regular basis, but I haven't seen it in the last meeting. But it's something that I'll take back to the audit committee and we'll certainly look at that to ensure that it is reported on a regular basis to this committee. Thank you.
How can I take it back to Mr. Ramasodi to deal with all the animal husbandry issues? Okay.
Before we pass the action audit, can we get where is the internal? We've employed one internal audit officer, something. Where is she? She was waiting outside. Okay. So she must come in and tell us. Can't pass her.
While she's still coming in, is the acting chairperson of the internal audit saying to the portfolio committee he has never seen the audit action plan, or I didn't hear properly? I'm not sure.
And certainly I've seen it before, but we haven't looked at it at the last audit committee meeting, which was last week. It wasn't presented at the meeting itself. But obviously there's a regular audit action plan. It wasn't tabled last week, but I'll ensure to take it back to the committee that that plan will be tabled at this forum on a regular basis, whenever you have the presentation.
Okay. That's the story. You see the internal audit, the responsibility of the department, officials of the department, which must report to the audit committee before it comes to us. So if it has not been presented to the audit committee, the story might not be right to this, the ears of members. But because in the last meeting, honorable members, it was presented.
audit matrix, yes. Yeah, and then the progress on the action plan was supposed to be presented in this meeting with the time frames. So the issue is, if it's not being presented to the audit committee, because one of the reason we're doing these things is that we've agreed with the Auditor General that Auditor General will not assess the department in three months because there is audit committee and internal audit, which as the department will be coming to report to the portfolio committee, the audit committee, because you have the oversight working with Auditor General, would then give us that progress report. So I just wanted to clarify that so that, Chair, you don't come to this meeting without the report. And one of the reasons why you are here is to give us that feedback on issues that are raised by Auditor General in your oversight. Are they being implemented? Those audit metrics and action plans and time frames have been done. So that's your meeting. I'm not sure what were you discussing in your meeting if you're not dealing with this one.
Chair, Madam Chair, certainly we look at the audit matrix. Maybe I've confused some terms here. We look at the audit matrix, and the thing is, we thought that appropriate action was taken to attend to queries raised by the external auditors in the 2016 audit, as well as the internal audit issues raised. So management on an ongoing basis, they attend to the outstanding issues or issues raised in that were accounted for or that were recorded in this audit matrix. So action was being taken to address it on an ongoing basis. So it's not that that it hasn't been addressed. Things are being addressed on an ongoing basis. I was asked about a number of days ago to stand in at this meeting. I don't know exactly what the procedures are and what the protocol is, which documents and which reports have to be documented at this meeting. All I can tell you, I've told that the DG will look at it, and if there are any questions from the floor or from the members, I should attend to that. So I don't know, really, I'm not aware of exactly which reports have to be documented and presented at this forum.
Okay. In an official meeting of portfolio committee, you are expected to do what the Auditor General has been doing previously. What is happening, the internal audit does its work and report to you, and you give the opinion on the report, and then the report will come here. Whether it's presented by department, but it must have your opinion as the audit committee. So as this portfolio committee, we took a decision that will extend invitation to the chairperson of audit committee to come and speak to their own opinion, so that together with yourselves, we are able to play oversight with that understanding. So we are clarifying it. Tomorrow when you come to this meeting, you must know your role, Chair.
Madam Chair, just 1 second again. The progress report on the internal audit quarter 3 report, we looked at that. And we were quite happy with what internal audit did for the third quarter. And in fact, the results were quite positive. They addressed a number of issues, and the report, the results of the reports were quite positive. We were quite happy with what was done by internal audit. I just wasn't aware that an official report had to be lodged at this forum.
Yeah, did she?
I think he is correct. We met today, 3 days ago, and today in the morning. The action plans are there, and the internal audit person is here. They can talk to that, because I wanted to see how far we are moving compared to what the audit, the Auditor General found on us. What are the repeats? What are not the repeats because of the risk? Then they produce the action plan of how they the collections have occurred, on what basis. That information is available. No, he is familiar with it. That's what he's saying.
Oh.
He's familiar with that report. What he's not familiar with was to come and whether he was going to present it here or not. We were going to present here the internal audit report, which they have. I don't know whether there's a difference between those two. All we have there is just a progress report.
That's what he said he was not aware. But if he's aware, it's fine. So, but that's why Honorable Maloyi has asked the question. Yes. So, if now she's aware of what on the progress made, they can report both himself, whether it's himself, because we have extended the invitation to him, or the Internal Audit Committee, because they report, Internal Audit Committee reports to the Audit Committee. If in your presence they lie, you can then be able to take any decision. So you don't have to physically present, or they can present in your presence. Chair?
Okay, Madam Chair, so I've mentioned, as I've said it just now, that we had the meeting, we looked at the progress report on internal audit for the third quarter, we looked at the audit matrix of the department, so they have attended, and I can report positively on that, that they did attend, to a lot of the issues. Obviously certain things they still got to look at, but they are up to speed with attending to issues reported by external and internal audit, and the progress report on internal audit was very positive. As I mentioned earlier, the department had a very positive result of the external review, quality review on its own internal audit function, which was at the top notch of what's relevant to internal audit departments.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think Honorable Maloyi.
You know, Chair, the only difficulty I have is that when we take decisions in a portfolio committee meeting, the department, when they come, they must report on those decisions. We have said when they present their quarterly reports, what must accompany those quarterly reports is progress on the audit action plan, or whether you call it matrix or not. That's why earlier on I was asking, because in your presentation, the only thing you have here is risk management. Is that what you call the audit action plan? So if they did not report, because they must give us a report on time, not in the meeting, in order for members of the portfolio committee to go through that report, when we meet with you here, we are able to engage with yourselves. Now, you can't just surprise us and call somebody and say the report is here. It is not here because we don't have it in our possession. So I'm simply saying and repeating what we said in the last meeting. When they report on their quarterly report, they must also report on the audit action plan.
Honorable Fratan.
Thank you, Chair. I haven't had anyone coming close to responding to both my questions as well as my comments. Particularly...
No, they've not finished to respond. We're dealing with the issue of audit. They've not finished responding on the questions.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I just want to close this matter with Chair and Internal Audit understanding the consequences of such reports, because when the Auditor General comes here at the end of the year, give a different information, then there will be consequences. Then it means that you would have not done your job. If Auditor General comes here and presents a different, that's why we want to have it, so that when the Auditor General comes at the, on the end of financial year,
on the assessment of the annual report, would compare your report and that of Auditor General, then there will be consequences for those things. So I just want to inform the audit committee and your internal audit so that you don't come here and summarize things. We want a report that we'll use at the annual report, when we assess the annual report. As they say, they have attached their money, the finances their budget is attached to their program. In your present, you agree, and Auditor General, if he pick up those things at the end of the year, in your present, then there will be consequences. So I just want you to understand why you have said you must be part of this meeting. You cannot just first give department permission to bring you to Cape Town paying tickets, and at the ultimate end you don't have consequences. And you have full powers, Chair. When you are a chairperson, you have full powers. You will oversee the finance of the department. You are the second in charge of Auditor General. So you're supposed to speak the same language with Auditor General. I would just want to clarify this one so that tomorrow again we don't come back and repeat the same thing.
Chair lady, let me just respond for the last time as far as that's concerned. And that is
you can say chairman.
Chair. Fact of the matter is, if I knew exactly, we note exactly what you've said here and what the committee is after. We will ensure in future we'll go back to committee to ensure that the proper progress report is drawn up based on the audit committee and tabled in advance to this forum so that you know exactly what has happened there. And then if you can ask, want to ask questions, you're free to ask whatever questions you want. It is just that obviously it's maybe due to ignorance. I'm not on a regular basis here, so obviously I was not aware exactly the procedure followed, because I was not informed. I was only informed towards the end of last week to be here. But that's no excuse. Fact of the matter is, the point is noted, and we'll take action as far as the future is concerned.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. DG, can proceed answering questions.
I didn't get the second question, Honorable Lawyer. Could you just assist
No,
me
no,
that?
The one of audit was closed.
No,
you continue to other questions.
Yes, I'm going to get the ask a second question. I think the audit one I captured, but there was a second one on the verification, on the validation. Okay.
The anticipation of a disaster event. Yeah. I could be rookie.
Okay. We noticed most of them. Primary health care, please come on in. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DM. The question from Honorable Maloyi on the mobile clinics or primary animal health care clinics, as we call them. Yes, of the 32 that we had ordered, 29 were delivered in December of 2016. Upon inspection, we realized that the 14 did not comply with the specifications, and they were sent back so that they can be rectified, because these clinics are supposed to be done according to the specifications. The outstanding, including the three that were outstanding then, the 17, were delivered in February and are currently undergoing branding according to the DAF allocation. The 15 vehicles that were delivered in this fashion. Three each were delivered in KZN and Mpumalanga. Four each were delivered in the Western Cape and Northwest Province, and one was for DAF. The outstanding 17 are three for respectively for Limpopo, Gauteng, and Free State, and then for the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape respectively. On the issues around the armyworm, as asked by Honorable Tongwane, I can confirm that there has not been any reports from the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. However, the two provinces continue to conduct detection surveys, and to date there has been any report from these. There was another question around the 15 active ingredients that we have registered, and the assumption from Honorable Member Tongwane was that the other 15 are still undergoing registration process. The statement indicates that we have got 15 active ingredients of 31 products. Using an agricultural active ingredient, I can use chlorpyrifos. That is an active ingredient, but from that active ingredient, you also get what we call brand names. For instance, you'll get Dasben or Losben as a brand name or a trade name. In human health issues, you can take paracetamol, you can trade it as Panado or Tylenol. So that's how it is. So of the 15 that we have registered, it trades under 31 names, different names that are there. So you can literally say that each and every product might be trading in under two names or so. The next question was whether we can win this battle on the armyworm. And I think I will answer in two ways on this one. One, in terms of the spread, if you look at the map that we just presented today, it says that the spread is all over the country except for the two provinces. However, the real issue in terms of winning the war is whether the pest is causing damage on the plants that we are having. And to date, in terms of the implementation of all the measures that we have taken, I think in terms of the damage controls that we have done, in terms of our early detection and early responses, we will be able to limit the damage and therefore win the war. In areas where there has been damages, we have also had the provinces also assisting in terms of the farmers in terms of planting alternative crops just to make up for the season. We, on the spread itself, I think I also need to report that we are still observing the behavior of the pest itself, because this is the first report. We never know whether it will overwinter in South Africa, and therefore we still have got to look at those aspects, but we are ready for the next season in terms of it being a summer pest. There were questions that were asked by Honorable Trevor Gulu on the outbreak of diseases, specifically around KZN. And I would like to indicate that there is a... South Africa has got vast experience in terms of dealing with outbreaks of diseases. However, what is very important is that the frequency with which these diseases are currently occurring is very worrying. And maybe some of the issues that we are starting to look at would be the provision of vets at different areas. Now, we have got what we call the South African Veterinary Strategy. The strategy seeks to have vets at local areas to ensure that we revive some of the programs that we had in the past, like dipping in loco. And this, from a departmental point of view, will take up with the KZN Department of Agriculture so that we can look at how we deal with it. Because if we look at disease like lumpy skin disease, it is very ironic that we can have that problem, because South Africa supplies the best vaccines. In fact, the world buys from us. The whole of the EU is supplied by OBP when it comes to lumpy skin. So we'll take that up and see how best we can deal with it. DG, those were the questions that were asked from Program 2 level. Thank you.
There was a question around what are we doing to revitalize the poultry industry. First, it's important to emphasize that the discussions on the partnership with foreign companies involved poultry stakeholders. Because there's this assumption that government got in and made decisions alone. It actually involved those stakeholders. So they realized that. So it's important that that one is done. There is therefore a task team comprised of various stakeholders that is going to assist.
DG, let me request the member who has asked this question that the process is such that we have received the presentation from the poultry industry last week on Friday. We'll receive the report from FAO, which is the union attached to poultry industry, and later on we'll have the department coming to present to us on the issues. And with that information, we'll then develop an action plan. I just, so that we doesn't lose it, because we're still going to deal with the matter after we've received the report from FAO. The person who has asked, the honourable member who has raised the question, can we request that they don't elaborate on it, because meeting, we're still going to deal with it in the next meeting. I request your indulgence, honourable member. Agreed, honourable Sultana. Honourable Sultana. Oh, it's Paul.
No, that was not my question.
Oh,
no.
Paul said, yes.
They're still coming to my questions. Thanks.
Okay. So this issue still have, it's on the agenda. We'll be dealing with it at that time. Then proceed to other questions.
Yes. Honorable Fritan was quite skeptical, though, that what you have written here as a commitment to commercialize 450 performance is no different, in fact with other strategies, is no different from what he has had before in 3 years. He is then saying, are you sure you want to do this? And is it going to happen? I can say with full confidence, when we brought this in the department, it's because of my experience outside. So I'm personally dedicated to ensuring that black farmers become commercial. Because I know when they do that, we shall have no problems with food security. I know. So that we assure you, we have put strategies around it, inclusive of funding. And I think you also asked a question about vegetables in the former homeland of Transkei. I think there's quite a lot, actually, that the government is doing there. One, we have leveraged private sector, the existence of crowding private sector funding. Mr. Motsebe, the minister, met together, is contributing 50 million, we are contributing 50 million or so, to ensure that the kings have sufficient food security. And that project is being run through our office. The second one is the department has ensured that we debush and take people back to the land. The 1 hectare, one household is being implemented in all those provinces, in all the provinces. And we are using government tractors. I think the issue I'm going to bring here again is going to be the one of commercialization, standardized process of commercialization, because that question was once asked. So there is a lot of progress happening there, and at one point, if you can visit places like Port St. John's, Tombo, Ngeleni, even Komkhulu, Elbode, we're doing feedlots there. We are ensuring that those feedlots, the king himself, which is what Mr. Motsebe is interested in, is the custodian of the distribution of the benefits of that feedlot. We are doing dipping in this former homeland to ensure that, and we're using boreholes as opposed to rivers, because the dip will be here and the river will be there. Accordingly, the plan is to access water. But in the process, when you clean the dip, the dip goes back and poison the water. So now we are actually digging boreholes to assist in the dipping of cattle and doing dipping tanks nationally. I think that's where that's what you asked. Yes, sir.
Did you?
The 450 commercialization of farmers, it was the program that came out of the State of the Nation. So which, as a committee, we expect you to put it in your APPs and with the program that you'll involve to reach to that level. So we don't need any commitment of mouth here. We want a concrete program of action to reach there. Yeah.
Did talk to the issue of boreholes. The relationship between us and other players, such as small business development, in the development of cooperatives, we do work with them. Funding is going to them, and we do direct them around small business farmers or small producers. We indirect quite, they are the lead, by the way, on the formation of cooperatives. So we do indirect with that department and many others.
The issue of the drought relief, it's coordinated by Uche Wasewood and the report that was there. I was not part of the meeting, but it was an old thing. So, yes, the intervention, because if you remember, Honorable Stein, if she was here, was going to fight with you. You're still talking about bringing the audit of the borehole. It's a long time, it's a long outstanding issue that you promised to bring it here, the area where the... And Honorable Fandane has got a mandate that he must raise it, because you promised that you'll bring it to them where the borehole is, how much it's worth. So if you have that copy, you can, you don't have to present it, give it to honorable members, because that's what they, it was an outstanding issue in the last and meeting. But we would then expect in the APP would have the plan in terms of dealing with climate change issues as a cut across issue, which will include the issues of drought, the issues of Woodinewa and others, and if you are going to still have going to have it, and the outbreaks that mainly some of them they are caused by the climate changes. So we need to have a program which to mitigate those issues. So it will be good if we can have that one of borehole and we close it and we now come up with a program that will holistically look into the issues of climate change and how we respond ourselves to those issues.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just that I do not know how to direct this report to. I'll take it, so you don't need to run.
take it.
And that's what that report says. I can just, without making excuses, it fundamentally also have to be given integrity. The last thing we want is to rush information here and you capture it was wrong. That would break the trust between us and you. I was late because we really, at some point, we wanted to go and see the boreholes because we knew that someone is going to test us on this. So that one is there. The second one is the one on drought. That report is here. Is available in terms of how much, where, who, we've got that answered. And I will make sure that it's distributed to the chair. The planting, one of the reasons I'm here is because planting and our readiness for planting is never before are we so ready to ensure that next season in particular we plant properly. The seeds have been ordered right now and all the necessary inputs. I'm comfortable also to say even the drought resistant maize, I'm buying the 100 times that are there using Lima, Fetzatlala. So we bring things early because nicely the year is starting with us fully. So now we're not taking things at the end, we're moving nicely. I'm confident that we also ensure that our farmers receive assistance in an appropriate time for the season.
Chair, I think that is
what I recall and I've registered. If any I miss, it will be because I was asleep. It could be that I was overwhelmed, there were too many questions. First.
Honorable Maloy?
No, Chair, the DG did not answer the question on the lead stakeholder, because I wanted to know who is this lead stakeholder who made it impossible for you to review the strategic risk register. You did not answer that question, and I will be very interested to get an answer on that question. The other question which he did not answer is on the production efficiency, the 80,000, because I will also be very interested to get an answer on that one, or whether if you say you have overachieved, are you talking about the support that you provided for production efficiency, or on what have you overachieved exactly? So I'll be very interested on that one. There are other two questions which he did not answer, and I thought, DG, you know, when we raise these questions, you note these things. And I thought that you brought a big team for them to assist you to note these questions. So I'm not sure why I did not assisting you to note these questions. So, Chair, if you can answer those ones, because time is not on our side. There are other three questions which I have posed which he did not answer. But if you allow me, I can go to my notes and remind you.
we'll answer them quick right now. My apologies, Whip.
Why the same reason that is appearing on your report is the reason that you've given in the second quarter. So you failed for 6 months to get to meet the stakeholder.
Perhaps just to start with the risk. In November, and perhaps just to say up to that time, the risk unit was still very lean in terms of the structure. And the director took ill for quite some time in that time. That's one of the issues. But secondly, I think what she maybe referred to as the stakeholders, that includes the unit outside the department that are contributing to our risk profile, that we were not able to bring them all together in that time, the same time. On the achievement of the 80,000, we're referring to the number of farmers that were supported. Perhaps the emphasis on the efficiency may be a different issue, but in terms of the number of the farmers that the smallholder farmers we support by providing the various components of support, which include the training, which includes the inputs, it is that number that we targeted, that we're saying in terms of the plan, that number has been supported.
Yes, DG, through you. I think Honorable Maloy, the Honorable Chair, is talking about
the reason for non-achievement by Program 5. Okay.
It is still sharing.
Yes, it is indeed what the chair has noted is true, DG, that they have advanced the same reason to say non-attendance of task team members is the reason why the meeting did not take place. Suffice to say, Chair, that please allow us to follow up with the program in terms of this reason to find out, you know, what actually is happening so that during this quarter four, it should not be the same reason that is mentioned. We ask that the Chair to allow us to follow up with the program.
Did you work for us through on why do you talk on her behalf? Are you the acting CEO or what's your well, Mr. Mokhok? Okay.
Well, I don't know why my colleague felt that. Maybe felt that we don't have an answer. He can take it on. I like the enthusiasm. But the truth is that we have just appointed the deputy director to run with this, and is familiarizing herself. I hate to agree with him that we need to come prepared to answer this question. It's one issue that maybe we didn't take close look at.
DG, you must just know that this section was not performing for the past 3 years. The budget allocated to them were not spent, and so that's one thing that you should note. In the next meeting, I'll request honourable members to bear with you that you still familiarise yourself with home, because you are an expert on the issue, but probably the familiarisation of the home. And how we've been doing things at home. So in the next quarter, we must get a better reason. We can't have this reason. For two conservative meetings, we have the same reason. If the task team is not working, why are you not disbanding it and get others? Because it can't be that we wait until for 6 months not having work done. So, sir, I would go on, sir. Merambil. In the next meeting, there is no push on my speaker. Did you?
Sir, I think by and large, we are trying to coordinate and put this thing together. And what we are presenting are efforts that I also have to admit are a little bit not coordinated. Talking together, I'm just about to conclude, Chair, and then give over to my DM to close on our side. I was just highlighting the fact that we take the comments and questions as building us, and now know when we prepare going forward the kind of key areas we need to look at. And I'm assuring you, Chair, that very soon you are going to get proper presentations on these issues. But it's slowly coming together, Chair. Having said that, I will then have my bosses here. As I conclude, I think he's the one who's going to finish the boardroom. Can I give to him, Chair?
Thank you, DG. Honorable members, the questions have been answered, all of them. I know that would not be satisfied with answers, but the time is not with us. We're supposed to go on lunch, and 2 o'clock we must go into the city. So you will have to bear with me. It's not that I want to oppress you. It's how the program is scheduled in Parliament. I think in your respective political parties, please fight for the committee time, because we don't have time to deal with issues.
we go to must now go to the house. We suspend our work. So I think in our respective political organization, let's fight for the committee time so that we are able to do a better oversight, because this time, with little time that we have, we are unable to do justice to our work. DM?
Thanks, Chair. Hoping not to waste your time. I hope my apology was sent that we were in the Cabinet Committee to hear SASSA matters. Just 1.5, 2.5 comments. One, I agree with you with the report format, that you can't give mine here and the report goes somewhere else. If it needs be, it could go both places, but we do need to get these reports from our sister departments down so that we know how we run that. I think we need to begin to work on that. The second one, I don't know why the Abalone money doesn't have home. Because if my mind serves well, one of the crime prevention laws, whether it's an organized or what, says the money that is got from proceedings of crime must go back to fight crime. There is that law somewhere. So if then this proceeding of Abalone is money from crime, must go and fight crime by protecting Abalone. So I think it should have home somewhere, and we need to find that home so that we don't, because it's law that the money out of crime proceedings must go back to fight crime. So I think we need to work that and come back with a full round answer on that. The last one, I think this government, maybe in particular this department, is beginning to do its work. I think we have been too kind and in terms of transformational matters. When it comes to this industry of fisheries, we have been really not doing the work in terms of transformational matters. 22 years down the line, you're not going to tell me that all companies without fail are white and some of them foreign, minus clear people of black Africans in particular that are running the industry. So that must be pushed. If some people get blood on the way, let there be blood on the floor. Maybe it is on that score that when you begin to scratch a little bit, there is this resistance. No, I can't understand that, because some quota, not everything is taken, you block everybody going to work in the industry with the thing. But it's a court matter, but I think government must be a bit punchy on it. The red matter, I did answer it the other day. Question keeps coming, but it's one that's got nothing to do with economics, it's got to do with politics. Because the TAC is beginning to see that some people somewhere can get this luxurious, beautiful lobsters. Now, voila. Just close it. So that those that they get a bigger share, they run to either east or wherever, and those that are getting a smaller one, they must get stuck with it. So we will ask it economically, we'll answer it politically, and we don't have another answer at the present moment. Nothing. The issue here and the problem is that, as I've said, we need to push harder and see these things happening and make sure that they happen, and they happen quick. But the government also work hard to help those that are young, new, and coming to the industry. But all of us as South Africans, we must remember, we are South Africans of all kinds. If you have been in fisheries, long before the government of apartheid can regulate it. That's why at one time we were all ran over by international syndicates. That's why our fish is sold in Spain, because Spaniards used to eat it, so they developed the taste. So now we have come to believe that is a thing that can't be happened. I must stand and say here, Chair, we will do these things, we will be hard sometimes, and we will make the invitation for all of us to make sure that it happens. The red issue on lobsters is a red herring. It's not an economic matter, it's a political matter.
Thank you, GM. I think as we transform the fishing industry, we should even transform the perceptions and change the mindset of our communities. Because we don't have to bring black people in the business. You need to get black people to eat fish, because it's got it's protein, which is needed, particularly with the young children, needed into the mind. So we should transform the industry and even the mindset that if you eat fish, you will not have teeth. Every now and then, as I've been greeted at home, they say, you still have teeth because we are eating fish in Cape Town. So there is that mindset that if you eat fish, you won't have teeth. So we have to educate our people that is the protein that is needed by the body, particularly to support your mind. I think we welcome the program DM, but I think this issue of ATC, you see, you can't fight science politically only. You have to get other opinions. You have to get other people who can do this thing for you, you have to, or collaborate with other countries for you to get assistance, because you don't want to then be blamed tomorrow of you undermining the science and all those things. We know it might be correct what you are saying, DM, but it's important that to be very cautious on those issues, that let's fight science by science, politics fight by politics, so that we are able to converge as society, because you don't want to get this department, which has been partly receiving better publicity, now getting bad publicity about complaining about the ATC with the red and brown and colors, those colors that... So I think we have to work hard, I agree with you, but as we fight, we must consider technical matters in areas where it needs techniques, so that you support your views technically, so that you don't get blamed tomorrow and be dragged to other programs that you don't know, because, you know, we need to be focused, and particularly because we had to fight for the slice of this department. We must be focused, not be allowed to be derailed from the programs. Thank you very much, DM, and your team and honorable members. You are released, DM and your team. Honorable members, can we have your 5 minutes?
Thank you.